This is PFW in Progress.
Gentlemen, you are the top 1%.
The elite. Best of the best. We'll make it better.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce you to our commanding officer at Top Gun. The very first man to win the Top Gun trophy. You will not find a finer fighter pilot anywhere in the world.
Paul Perillo.
I will fire when I am good and ready. You got that?
And Andy.
And Andy?
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
Andy Hart.
You're everyone's problem. That's because every time you go up in the air, you're unsafe. I don't like you because you're dangerous.
That's right.
I am dangerous.
Eric Scalavino.
I want somebody's butt. I want it now. I got it.
For now, anyway.
Text twice. I want some butt.
Mike Parenti.
It's your attitude. The enemy's dangerous. But right now, you're worse than the enemy. You're dangerous and foolish. You may not like the guys flying with you. They may not like you. Whose side are you on?
And you never know. Lori might stop by.
He is 100% prime time in love with you.
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Gentlemen, this is the real thing. This is what you've been trained for. You are America's best. Make us proud.
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. The gang is finally all here. It is Wednesday. Excuse me. It's Papa Gino's Day, as you can hear. But the gang's all here. This is our first show this week because it was a Monday night game, and then Tuesday was Patriots Monday. So this is actually our Tuesday edition of PFW in Progress on a Wednesday. No, we're not going to do the picks today. We're not doing picks.
Two genders
in the booth, as you can tell.
So we only have one day to come up with a Qdoba question of the week.
That's right. So this is it. The question will be derived from what happens on this show.
So bring your A game today, boys.
All right.
Speak for yourself.
So we have to at some point say when to call in tomorrow, right, for the Qdoba question?
All right. Or Andy does.
Anyway, big win for the Patriots, 41-7 against the Broncos Monday night. I think all of us here predicted a win, but no one really figured it was going to be anything.
Not by 34 points.
No. So we have a lot to talk about. Tons, and I mean tons of emails are already into the show. Everybody wants to get their 2 cents in. But, of course, the win did not come without a cost.
It was Pyrrhic. Right?
Rodney Harrison.
Pyrrhic.
It was announced, has been put on IR for the season.
Pyrrhic?
That's reported. Did we get an email about that yet?
No, but Stacey James announced it
at the press conference.
Oh, yeah.
And before the game, Lawrence Maroney has been put on IR.
Yep.
So it's, you know, the Patriots have some
issues.
Gut check time. You know, they have to look at the guys that are healthy and see who's going to step up. And I think, though, they're, you know, besides Brady going down, a lot of teams are in the same boat, which really, you know.
The team on the other side of the ball lost Champ Bailey and Boss Bailey.
Right. So it points to the fact that, really, this season is up for grabs. There is no clear-cut favorite. I mean, the Giants, I guess, and the Titans. But other than that, no one's running away with anything this year. No.
And this Rams team that's coming here this weekend isn't going to be the pushover that we might have thought a few weeks
ago. No,
they're
playing much better. So there's a lot to talk about here. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com. Number's 508-543-7482. That's webradio@patriots.com.
Quick news. Antoine Spahn was added to the roster from the practice squad
to
fill the Rodney Harrison slot. Dan Conley and somebody else.
Mark Dillard.
Back
for the
80th
time today.
Bill was asked about the possibility of John Lynch coming back, and Bill was kind of curt in his response.
Yeah.
And was
apparently,
just like,
he feels like
our roster is full.
He sucks.
that's what he said.
Our roster is full.
We'd have to create a position for him. I mean, he made it sound like they have no interest in
him. What about Ty Law?
That was not asked.
That wasn't asked, but if they wanted him, he'd be here too.
Because I don't know if you know, the roster is full.
Okay. Sorry, can't get rid of a guy.
Right, well, they
can't
could.
Get rid of Maurice Price.
We know they could.
The roster wasn't full when they had this decision to make.
Right.
I mean, obviously, if they wanted Lynch, they would have signed Lynch.
They value Antoine Spahn over John Lynch.
So that's your answer. Spahn gets elevated, and Brandon Merriweather will be the starter.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Bill said that as well.
And he said nothing would change there. He said with Merriweather and Sanders, they've both played a lot of football for us this year. They've been asked to do a lot of different things, and that won't change.
And nothing will really change because we were talking about it. Lewis Sanders has played a lot.
Yep.
Jonathan Wilhite has played a lot. Those guys will continue to play a lot.
And Andy brought up a good point in the press conference talking about with Rodney specifically. He is a guy that's somewhat unique in the fact that he can do so many different things well.
He's sui generis.
Yeah. Is that
sui generis? Oh. Generic? No, generous.
Generous.
But not O-U-S-I-S. Generous.
Oh, generous. Might be better.
Sui generis.
Oh, so you weren't pronouncing it properly?
How the hell would I know? I don't speak Latin.
You know I don't speak Latin. But anyway, because Rodney can get to the line of scrimmage and blitz and, you know, be an extra guy in the box, who knows if James Sanders or Brandon Merriweather, I think Sanders would be the candidate out of those two.
I know.
To do some of those things. And, you know, Bill said a lot of different people will be asked to
some of us are optimistic. Some of us think these two pieces are now going to be in better holes. I think Merriweather is better deep, and I think Sanders is better at the line of scrimmage, and he's been spending a lot of time deep down the middle of the field. So
this is what Merriweather was brought here to do. So
yeah,
now he's going to get his chance.
I think I'm less concerned with Merriweather than the play of Sanders, you know,
kind of
receding because he doesn't have Harrison out there with him.
Yeah, but he wasn't playing well deep in coverage. On a couple of those plays in San Diego, he was the deep safety and did not look good.
Because that's not what
he's
good
at. On balls.
No, he's never been good.
So now they put him in a spot where he can probably play.
I'll be honest with you. I'd be more worried that now James Sanders is too close to the line of scrimmage and those touchdowns that he saved with his tackles, he won't be there. It'll be Brandon Merriweather, and will he make those tackles? Yeah. Or instead of giving up big plays through the air over the top, are you giving up big plays that hit in front or running plays that then break through for big plays? Because Sanders has saved this team a ton of times. Right, Paul?
I think he is. That's
everybody
one of
makes fun
suits.
Of me when I say he's a good tackler and he saves touchdowns. He stinks. He's a good player. I'm not going to say he's Rodney Harrison. He's not a 15-year pro with 30 sacks and 30
picks
and
coverage.
All this.
He's a better
I'm not so sure I'm as high on him as a player. You say he's a good player. I'm
he's
not so
player.
Sure I would go that far, but yeah, I think
you
he
don't
is.
Think he's a good player?
I think he has been a good wow. tackler.
I think he's very good at what he does.
As
well,
that last line of defense, I think he's prevented several touchdowns, and we commented on one the other night on the first drive. I think Michael Pittman was a hair away from a really big play. I think it was a 13-yard run. I think it could have been a lot more.
Well, let's get your takes on that game. Can anybody want to sum it up?
Well, Andy, I think,
two
should
snowballs.
Because he's the one who thinks that Denver was going to win. You incorrectly pointed out that we all thought they were going to win.
I forgot about that.
We're
going
to start moseying up. I believe Eric picked them, too, didn't he?
I picked New England.
Oh.
I think it was clear. I think Denver.
When has he ever not picked the Patriots?
I thought he grew a pair.
No.
No, Fred has picked against the Patriots more than Eric has.
No. Eric has confirmed he did not, in fact, grow a pair.
I think Denver
was moving the ball pretty well.
Being purposely anti-Homer is not growing a pair.
No, okay. Looking at the facts and saying that they're a big play.
Well, you were wrong again.
But I may not have been had the quarterback not broken his finger on a guy's helmet on the first play of the game, or had Patriots season ticket holder Andre Hall not toss the ball to the Patriots twice, and season ticket holder, what was his name?
Al Riveron,
the referee, made every call go the Patriots way.
All I know is that the Patriots overcame getting sacked six times.
Can we?
And Matt Castle didn't throw
one pick.
The fact
that five of those came when it was 27.
Right, Matt Castle didn't throw one pick. He played very well. You cannot take that away.
Right. But, and I think that contributed to the win more than, you know, Denver.
To sum up the win,
more than Cutler getting hurt in the first play of the game?
He wasn't that hurt.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't really affect him,
Fred. Games?
I'd sum up the game like this.
Snaps.
For every good thing that happened to New England, something bad happened.
Oh, my
right.
God.
It was two snowballs.
Right.
A bad one for Denver and a good one for New England, and they just started rolling down the hill.
No, that's not what he's talking about.
He's going back to the Pyrrhic victory.
Open your ears and listen to him.
They score 41 points, but Matt Castle still gets sacked six times.
They
hold the defense does well holding the other team to 7 points, but they lose Rodney Harrison.
This sack thing is,
you know, they get some of the calls to go their way, but you know, they still weren't, you know, they weren't throwing the ball that much because Sammy Morris was running like crazy, and then he gets hurt.
Right.
You know, Randy Moss finally scores a couple of touchdowns. I guess that's the only thing you could say that was good, that there wasn't a bad reciprocating thing that happened.
The game changed when Hall fumbled twice on his first two touches because they were moving the ball
absolutely.
Well down the field.
Absolutely.
They had two chances, I thought, to put some points on the board and grab an early lead.
Actually,
and they didn't do that. And if they had grabbed an early lead, the game made it turn out differently.
It would have been different, but I think the way the Patriots were playing.
No, they made good plays
in
the ball.
The aggressive nature
fumbles.
That they had in that game that they certainly didn't have in the San Diego game. I think that boded well for them throughout the night.
It just comes down to getting out to a quick start.
Yeah,
and
I don't think it
would have
been a 41-7 game, but I think the Patriots would have won that game the way they were playing.
I'm not surprised they won, Fred, because Denver's defense is horrible, and we saw why.
And we knew that going in.
That's why we all picked the Patriots.
I certainly didn't
pick them because of their defense.
I thought they would do more through the air. I didn't think they would run it with such success, not having Maroney, not having Jordan back there. And Sammy Morris really surprised me, but the overall outcome of the game did not.
Well, Sammy Morris, he surprised me, but really the offensive line is the biggest, I think, the biggest, you know, thing that changed
from week to week. I think they really came out there with an attitude. And, again, you're talking about Denver, but I don't think that the San Diego defense is that much better than the Denver defense.
No, and Paul and I were talking about this. Not only were the Patriots, you know, pushing guys off the ball 5 yards, now Denver's not even making tackles
while
guys get through the line.
You know, I just thought it was ridiculous. I thought total dominance. Denver's defense was not even competitive in the game. The surprising thing to me was I thought the Patriots could have a very good offensive game, and I thought, and I said it on Friday, on Thursday, I thought it would be the running game. I said, you just got to run it right between the tackles against these guys. The surprising thing to me was that Denver didn't match them point for point, which I think was a large part, Cutler, you think it was irrelevant, but I mean, I didn't see him throw really an effective pass in that game. And I think he's
that pass he laid into
arm.
Brandon Marshall, that Marshall got flagged for the pass interference.
It was a touch pass.
That was downfield, and it was a beautiful pass.
And it was a rainbow. I'm saying the ball didn't come out of his hand the way we've been accustomed to seeing, the way that Bill talked about him all week, being able to make these throws deep downfield, deep on a line. He didn't look like he had that.
It was clearly bothering him. Even Shanahan said afterward that he came out in the first half to get an extra because it hurt him.
Don't you think that the Patriots pass rush had a lot to do with that?
I personally didn't think it had anything to do with
it. They didn't go
the
down
game.
The field enough, I didn't think.
I thought it
I
had
said
more
that to
do
Paul.
With
they
his,
threw
with
the
his
pick
finger.
Early.
I don't think he had a lot of time.
I thought he had plenty of time, to
I
be
thought
honest.
He
you
had
only
the
got
time.
Sacked twice, and I didn't really see him on the run all that often.
Really?
Yeah, his throws.
No.
I thought
he was clearly affected.
Looked a little wobbly. Looked didn't look as hard.
He had one throw on an in cut to Marshall that was a completion for like 15 yards, and he was upset because he didn't. The ball didn't do what he wanted it to do. So it's not like he was making an excuse for a terrible throw. The ball got there, and he completed it, but he was saying, I'm just not me. I can't do what I want to do with the ball.
And I think that's where the game changed was when he hit his finger on
first play.
Wilfork's helmet.
Right.
First play.
That's what changed
now,
the game.
Freddie
and Mike brought up the fumbles.
Because they have to score. They know he's like the old Peyton Manning. He knows he needs to score 35 points if they're going to win
the game. That's exactly the mindset that it looked like Denver had going into that game. We can win this game because we can match him score for score. And obviously, they turned the ball over 5 times, and that's game, set, match. But where I agree with Freddie is I think that the Patriots were going to win that game regardless because I think that they did play, as you said, Freddie, with a different enthusiasm in a physical nature. The offensive line put it on themselves. I thought they were dominant in the game. They took it right to dead. I don't think that was going to go into a slump. If they had to match score for score, I don't think there was anything the Patriots did in that game that,
they
were feeling good about themselves. They might have done this. They might have done that. I think they were just rolling. I don't think they would have scored 41 points because I think Denver scored half of those for them with all those turnovers. If they don't turn the ball over 5 times, the Patriots aren't going to score 41. Right. But I think it would have been a tighter game, but the Patriots would have won the game because I feel like they played much better.
So, usually in a blowout, there are things that the other team does to contribute to the amount of points and the point differential. But I think the Patriots were the better team that night.
You guys missed Freddie and I's appearance last night on cable access on Wayne's World.
Yeah, we actually did it in the computer room of Neckin.
The Wayne's World set was far more impressive than what we were on last night.
It's up on the site right now. Chris put it up. But I told him, I said, under no circumstances should my face ever be on the homepage of Patriots.com. Did you see what he had? He had a split screen of me and you on the homepage of Patriots.com.
I said, get that to hell.
I look like I haven't slept in 4 days. I had tea bags under my eyes.
Not the first time.
Look at Fred's face.
Those are actually called Arabian goggles.
That's Arabian
goggles. It was a really bad situation for Freddie and I last night. And not surprisingly, Andy jumped ship like the rat that he is.
Lawrence Maroney did. I saw an out and I took it.
What was your out?
There was an email that vaguely said, because of construction, we're going to have to shoot in the newsroom. So
shoot in the nude?
Some guy may have to be in the web desk or something. And I go, well, if it'd make it easier for you, two would be better. I'd be happy to stay home. And he replied, it would probably look better with just two.
So he did that, then called me. Lazy. So Fred and I gutted it out. But
no commitment.
I agree. And Fred made that comment last night on the show.
You've become Tom Brady. You don't compete anymore. You just don't care.
I choose not to compete.
Brady getting married, Fred.
Is that confirmed?
No.
So what are you talking about?
So why bring it up?
I mean, someday, okay.
If we're sticking to stuff that's 100% confirmed.
Did it have a time?
That's going to do it for PFW in Progress. We'll talk to you next week.
Did that have a time element to it, that item? Did it say when?
Soon.
Because I got to think that's going to happen
He only reads the headlines, you know.
I got to think.
I actually heard it on the radio
some...
when they were reading the.
You only listen to the headlines.
Right.
You don't carry your girlfriend's water the way he does if you don't intend to get married. And if that's just someone he's having a fling with.
Wonder if she'll make him
sign
a
prenup. He's not doing the things that she
I think
makes
he can
him
do
it.
Better.
You think she'll make him sign a prenup?
If she's smart.
Because she's got more money than him.
Oh, yeah.
Not even close.
No. And you usually make the lady in the relationship sign it.
She's an incorporation of herself, mm-hmm. in and of herself.
Yep. So, all right. Any other comments on the game?
I thought the game was as good as I think the 08 Patriots can look. I don't know
well,
I'll
we'll have
feel.
To see how it grades out defensively.
All right. Well, on the phone right now is Dan in Delaware. We'll get his take on it. Dan, how you doing?
Pretty good. How you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, good game. It was good to see Castle throw around a bit. You know, he should do the same this week, coming up against another weak defense against the pass. But, you know, I'm a little concerned about the defense because they've been kind of off and on. And just tell me, you guys, what do you think? Are they just not playing with heart every game?
I don't think heart's the issue.
Well, I mean, they all openly discussed the enthusiasm and having fun out there, and Bill told them to let it go and let loose and showed them tapes of them making plays and not celebrating after them, and they all talked about that. So clearly Bill saw, whether it's heart or lack of energy or lack of – there was something lacking that he was pointing out there, and it wasn't physical. It was emotional.
I mean, it's been obvious because, you know, here's the fourth the fourth best offense in the league. Maybe they've gone against some soft opponents, but you know, statistically, the fourth best offense in the league, and we slaughtered them. And yet, against weaker opponents, you know, we struggled and we've looked flat.
Well, I think there is something to be said for, you know, taking your job and the game seriously, but also balancing that with having fun, realizing right. that it's a game. And I think what the players and Bill alluded to after the game was the fact that they didn't appear to be having fun,
well,
especially in you know the recent losses. It looked too much like it was.
Yeah, I know, and you can't.
It's hard to have fun when you don't play well.
That's what Adelis Thomas said, and I agree with him. It's easy to have fun when you're doing your job, and it's easy to have fun when you're blowing somebody out. They had a lot of fun last year
right.
when they were
well,
blowing
I think
people
it is
out.
A talent
but you
issue
can't
a
underestimate what losing a Brady does to a morale of the team. It's something that a coach needs to monitor every day. Now, I remember way back, and Paul, you'll remember, when Parcells left.
Going back to the 40s
and,
with Paul.
Carroll took over.
That's a great point, Fred.
The first time they beat Parcells, but then they went to the Jets, and they just got manhandled by the Jets. And all the Jets players were on the sideline, you know, celebrating everything. And I remember Lawyer Malloy in the locker room afterwards saying, you know, we look over on that Jets sideline, and we're just like, we want what they have. You know, and the Patriots were feeling sorry for themselves
yep.
because they had lost someone, you know, that they, you know, in Bill Parcells. And, you have to worry about that with any team.
Every day. I think the point that you made about every day is accurate because the way that season started, the 97 season, Patriots were flying high. The Jets were the 1-15 team.
Right.
The Patriots were killing everybody. They got off to the 4-0 start, and Carroll looked like, well, now they have the guy they want, the guy who treats them like men, the quote-unquote players coach as opposed to the disciplinarian, and everybody was great. But as that season wore on and they realized that they weren't getting the discipline that they needed from Parcells, and that hit rock bottom in the game that Freddie's talking about at the Meadowlands where the Jets just killed the Patriots, killed them. I think it was 31-3 or 31-10.
And it wasn't even
that
close. That.
No.
Yeah.
And that's all those quotes came out of the locker room after the fact. We want what they have. You really have to stay on it and monitor it.
Yep.
Well, I think that Brady's injury started a lot of that, but I kind of expected to see the veterans step up and make plays to inspire the rest of the team. And instead, I heard the players talking about, you know, what did Rodney Harrison say? Something like our heart wasn't in it that one game. Not our heart, but
we got the wind taken out of our sails.
We got the wind taken out
after they
San
didn't
Diego,
score on
right,
the goal line.
The
right.
first and goal yeah. play, yeah.
You know, they needed in the coaching, they haven't really. Just in terms of the defense, it doesn't seem like they're calling the plays to allow the veterans to go in there and make some plays to inspire the rest of the team. They've been kind of holding back. And a little
did
bit
they have the personnel to play any better than they're playing?
They're a great defense. I think they have the personnel.
I still think they're trying to figure out what they have defensively. That's why I've seen so many different personnel.
I don't know who wrote it. I don't know if it was Mike Reese or Gasper. One of the regular beat writers said that Dean Pease let the pass rush loose this week. Now, I don't know if that's true, but you definitely saw more pressure on the quarterback
we
than
did.
You did the week before. The knockdowns that – all the knockdowns
more than last
Cutler
week?
Had,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
More than last week, yeah.
But that was Brock's terrible week.
That's
like saying we saw less big plays than we did
but that's
the previous
week. I don't think they had anywhere near as much pressure as they did in San Francisco 2 games ago.
Right. We're not talking about
I think it was comparable.
I didn't even think it was close.
I thought it was.
No, not close to San Francisco.
I thought Cutler had
obviously better.
J.T. O'Sullivan was running as soon as he snapped the ball.
Every single play, I thought Cutler had plenty of time to find receivers for the most part. The 2 sacks came very late when it was 27-34-0. I didn't really think there was that much pressure.
It was an observation by one of the writers that said Dean Pease definitely
I think it
let
was clearly
lose.
Better than last week. I can't see how
yes.
it wasn't.
Absolutely.
But that's the point we're making. That's
but
what
it was
saying.
Rock bottom last week in terms of pressure.
But that doesn't mean it still wasn't better.
Yeah, it was better than it was against San Diego. I don't think it was as good as it was in pretty much any
no,
other
game.
No,
it's not as good
well,
as it needs to be
it's
either.
Like saying the running game was better than the week
exactly.
before.
I don't think
great,
it was as
cares?
Good as it was against the Jets.
Change.
I don't think it was as good as it was against San
Now, if you tell me it was the most Dean Pease has let the pass rush go all year, then it's an observation.
Well, Fred, and if that observation is true, that begs the question, I think. Why wasn't he letting them loose earlier?
Well, that leads into my point, letting these big guys make plays. You know, did Richard Seymour have a different role this week than he did last week?
Yes, on the bench.
Did Vince Wilfork and Ty Warren have a different – did Mike Vrabel have a different role this
I still
week?
Think they're trying to figure out what their best – yeah, exactly. They're still trying to figure out all their personnel groupings to me. That's why you're seeing so many different rotations defensively because they don't really know what they have yet and who's the best – player to put at different spots. I think they're still trying to learn and try to find that identity that we talked about in the last show. I don't think it's there yet.
Dan's trying to get a word edgewise. Dan, what's up?
No, it's okay. I was just going to say, you know what? I think it's time to let the front seven be the front seven and be the backbone of this defense because they are the backbone of this defense.
I agree.
I don't think the coaching staff feels that way.
Clearly.
All right, well, you know what? I get to listen to you guys live today. I'm homesick, so I'll be looking forward to
it. Well, get better.
Good and bad for you.
So's Gary.
Just like the Patriots, huh?
So's our guy Gary. He's homesick today, too.
Yeah, Gary took the day off, too. I mean, he's sick.
Did he?
Malingering.
All right.
You guys have a great day.
See you, Dan.
So Dan Two Genders in the booth, and I come in, and he's a big Howard Stern listener.
Yeah,
I listen to Stern occasionally, and they have this character, Eric the Midget, on Howard Stern. He got laid. Yeah. Actually, by two hookers last
week.
Where
are we going? This is not going in a direction.
So I walk in there and I go to Dan.
Not by
I go,
Kelly Clarkson?
I said to Dan, I go, Eric got laid. He's like, he did? I'm like, yeah. He was thought I was talking about Eric Scalavino. Then I explained to him, no, Eric the Midget. He was less surprised that Eric the Midget got laid than if it was Eric.
I don't know who I want to kill first, you or Two Genders.
Good news is Andy's third on the list.
We've been getting along very well lately.
Swimmingly.
Bosom buddies.
All right, well, we're going to take a break. It's 12:24. Like I said, we have a ton of emails. We'll get to them soon.
Pull the Capella right there. We'll get to them
we
soon.
We know you have a busy day ahead of you, and mornings are always tough to get through. So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today and grab a freshly ground, freshly brewed Dunkin' Donuts coffee. It's the perfect thing to get you going in the morning. Dunkin' Donuts coffee is made with real Arabica beans, which give it that rich flavor everybody loves. And while you're there, try the new egg white flatbread sandwich from the new DD Smart Menu. Choose from two delicious varieties, turkey sausage or veggie. Both served on multi-grain bread. With under 300 calories, you can now make a smarter choice for breakfast. So, stop into your local Dunkin' Donuts today and try one with a medium hot coffee for only $3.99. Price and participation may vary, plus applicable taxes. Limited time offer.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Paul Perillo prides himself on being the old-timer of the PFW crew.
Going back to the 40s with Paul.
Well, let's face it, it's actually Andy who makes fun of Paul for being an old-timer. But just because he was born in the 40s or something, it doesn't exactly mean Paul has all the answers. In fact, it seems like just about everything Paul's come up with, he didn't come up with.
I was going to say he's rated the way he should be, too. I was going to say, I read something. This is what I was going to say, just on this topic.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
That's the way I was going to say. That's probably on mission statement right there.
Wow. I was going to say, you know why it is.
What's the matter, Paul?
No, I was going to say it was before 85, so. I was going to say that, but I don't even know.
Jeez, Paul, what do you know? We're not sure if you ever had an original thought, and even that your catchphrases might be stolen. Right, Eddie Mac?
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
All right, back here in PFW in progress. As I said, we have a ton of emails, but before we get to them, Bill Belichick had his press conference this morning. Guys, any revelations about Sammy Morris? We know that Harrison's been put on IR. Any updates on some of the injuries or anything else?
He was asked about Lamont Jordan's status and whether he was any closer to coming back to the field. And
day to day.
He said, yeah, day to day. He's day to day.
Okay.
Day to day, Fred.
So we just don't know. What else were the topics of discussion this morning?
Rodney. You know, Merriweather stepping in.
You going to talk about your rotation thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
He took what I thought, in Fred Kerr style, was a little bit of a glancing blow to some of his star front seven defenders. I asked him if he'd rotated more this year up front, how it was going, whatever. And he gave sort of a generic answer, but then ended with, I mean, if you have Reggie White, you play him.
Right.
Which I took
so
as.
So there's no one down there
there's
that's
no Reggie
a
White.
Three-down player.
I mean, Richard Seymour is a multi-time All-Pro, multi-time Pro Bowler who rotates through with Mike Wright and Lakeven Smith. And are you telling me that Richard Seymour is not as. Because we thought Richard Seymour was on his way to a Hall of Fame career. So he's essentially Reggie White here.
Yeah.
But apparently Bill doesn't see it that way.
To me, I thought Monday night was glaring in that regard because Jarvis Green was out. I always kind of thought that some of that rotation was because they wanted to get Jarvis Green 15, 20 plays every game because they thought he rushed the passer pretty well, which I think he does.
Yep.
He was out, and then you had Mike Wright and Lakeven Smith, as Andy just pointed out, filling those same roles. Yep. Now, I don't think you need to find 15 to 20 snaps for those players, but yet he still did. So clearly that's what he wants to do is rotate these guys. And you know, Gary Guyton's been involved in that with the linebackers as well.
That's what he wants to do is rotate. Would he rather, if he could, have Seymour out there if he thought he was good enough? I mean, is he rotating because he has to?
Based on that last comment, I would say yes.
Yeah.
He only played about 35 snaps.
You know, so this isn't a philosophy thing that no matter how good Seymour is, he's going to rotate. I think he said in that statement, if he had a guy as good as Reggie White,
he would play him.
He would play him.
And we all know from the past that Seymour used to play every snap, so clearly he doesn't think he's that player anymore. That's what I think.
I think there's
and I even gave Bill an out by asking, are you of the philosophy that later in the year, you know, you benefit from this, guys are fresh or whatever, and he kind of poo-pooed it. I mean, he kind of led us in all directions towards
his philosophy is putting
this for freshness.
Reggie White, if he were on this team, would be on the field for all 60 snaps.
His philosophy, he said, following up to that, Andy, the last thing was that my philosophy on that is to put the players in the best position for the team to win the game.
So clearly Richard Seymour has, for him to be one of the best players in the best position, he can only play 20, 30 snaps, whatever it is.
Yep.
That's what I took from that.
That is when he said, and if we had Reggie White, we'd play him.
And I think that if you're Richard Seymour, you should take it exactly that way. Mm-hmm. I'm not playing good enough to be out there on every snap, and I need to step it up. I think we might have seen a sign of that, you know, in this game. I think in the way the season started, we certainly, you know, looked at him, and he was playing great. He played great in that Jets game, mm-hmm. But he hasn't been consistent.
But could Richard Seymour argue, I was consistent when I played all the time?
I guess you could.
I mean, could he say, I need to be out there more?
Well, again, I don't think they're being, you know, arbitrary about the number of snaps. There's something that he did or didn't do that is telling the coaches that we need to get other people in there.
I'm just being devil's advocate. And he could say, back when I was dominant, I played all the time.
Yeah, back when I was dominant. You played almost every snap against the Chargers last week, and the team didn't touch Phillip Rivers.
He also
he rotated every
week. He was rotating a lot.
He's been rotating a lot.
He also had
Fred Kirsch actually went ballistic and said,
Why is Seymour not in there?
He played a higher percentage of snaps against San Diego than he did this past
That may be, but he's rotated all year.
And what was the number of snaps that San Diego had offensively?
59.
And what was the number of snaps Denver had offensively?
60.
And what was the score in the second half of those games?
They were both blowouts. So conceivably, he could have been, off the field in both cases.
I thought we had a whole thing that in the second half, the Patriots were a yard away from making it 17-10.
That never happened
in the second half.
Right, but about 5 minutes into the third quarter was not 17-10.
Well, I think, though, the point is
he's rotated all year. All six weeks he's rotated.
I'll be honest with you. I'm very surprised that number is what you said because I thought he was rotating a very
– According to Mike Reese, the last two games, 48 out of 59 snaps against the Chargers and 35 out of 60 against Denver. So he played less Monday night.
No, listen, the numbers don't lie. I'm just very surprised by
it. Right, and I think he's playing less. I think because they're seeing now this three-man front playing on every down is not getting it done, and they're rotating other people
in
there
now.
Well,
I think you could argue that.
So what are the Chargers doing?
Were running out of victory with running plays, so Seymour's playing, and you might be sending those guys a message.
The Broncos are
coming back from a huge deficit, so it's passing plays, so you have nickel and dime on the field.
Right, so you get right
But
up
I still
there
think,
get, you know.
Even if you want to compare first halves, he's rotated all year because I've talked to him about it a couple. He loves it, or he says he loves it. He all his quotes involved. We have a lot of talent on this team. We have depth. You know, we can take advantage of that early in the season. Then in December and January, if we're going to get to where we want to get to as a defense and as a team, we're going to benefit from that. So he's saying all, or in the past, I haven't talked to him this week, but had said all the right things and seemed to be a proponent for it.
Okay, well. I just think when you have a guy that, you know, like we said, he's definitely a Pro Bowler and
maybe someday,
you know, we talked about Hall of Fame.
Well, he was. You know,
yeah.
We haven't talked about Pro Bowl, Hall of Fame, or All Pro in a couple of years.
Right. So. He had serious knee injury.
Right. But now he's healthy. And,
well, he's healthy, but sometimes you lose
after an
injury like that. Sometimes you lose something. Maybe he's especially lost a little
dudes.
Something.
Yeah.
But I think there's a big difference.
Quickness-wise or, you know, explosion, whatever. Maybe he's not exactly who he was before.
Who did we see kill him?
Might be healthy, but, you know.
Rookie.
Jake Long, right?
Oh, yeah. The one play, that's all I remember. You talk about explosion and lost a little something. I said, I wonder how Jake Long's doing with Richard Seymour in the next snap. He was 5 yards downfield, got blown off the ball by Jake Long. So maybe he has a lot. Maybe he's not the same player if you really break down the film.
But that's what I'm wondering, and when Dan was on the phone, is are they not letting – quote unquote, letting the front seven be the front seven, or, you know, are they holding them back? Are they doing this? Or they don't have that talent. I mean, if I was a defensive coordinator of that team, I'd be awfully leery of sending the kitchen sink with that secondary. That's just how I would feel about it.
Right.
Because I might get there a few times, but I'm also going to give up a lot of big plays.
Yeah.
And that's supposedly their mantra. That's why that San Diego game was so glaring. They don't give up big plays as a rule.
Right.
And that's why all of those big plays happening in one game was so surprising. I don't think I would be sending a whole lot of pressure either. I'm not sure they have the guys to get there, and I'm not sure they have the guys to cover up if they don't get there.
But I think the argument could be made in terms of just letting them go, I think one of the arguments of that would be, let's just keep Ty Warren, Vince Wilfork, and Richard Seymour on the field as long as possible. If they're sucking wind and they're tapping out, okay.
Right,
but other than that, I want to see our front seven, all of them, stay on the field and make plays. because we've seen a lot of Gary Guyton, we've seen a lot of Pierre Woods, we've seen a lot of Lakeven Smith,
Mike Wright. I
certainly
don't want to see Mike Wright and Lakeven Smith as often as I saw them Monday night.
And we're seeing a lot more of Guyton lately. He was starting to get in like third, fourth quarter.
Guyton's like he's replaced Mayo in passing situations.
I don't mind Guyton as much because I think the guy he can flat out run. And I think that in those situations, I think that's valuable.
I actually think that one's a specific Gerard Mayo rookie wall thing. Gerard Mayo played 98 straight snaps to start the year. Well, if he's going to – he's good, and we want him to play. If he's going to make it through the year, and Gary Guyton's a half percent drop-off in terms of running on passing downs, let's get Guyton in there and get him experience,
well,
too.
Well, who was the guy in training camp, the safety that they were having play linebacker a lot?
Tank Williams.
I mean, maybe this is an extension of that experiment.
I don't think so.
No?
I think this is more – these both guys are rookies who have the ability to play on passing downs as linebackers. Yeah. And if we can afford to put Guyton on the field, we'll benefit from it later with Mayo because, I mean, let's be honest. Ask a guy, Patrick Willis is Patrick Willis. Okay, he did it last year.
The rookie wall affects most rookies.
Not that many inside linebackers are just going to come in and play 6,000 straight snaps as a rookie and be fine and not show any wear and tear.
Chris with a TIAN is on the phone. Chris, how you doing?
Okay, what's going on?
Nothing much.
Well, I guess I'm cautiously optimistic. I guess that's how I would phrase it. I thought it was a great sort of coming out party for the defense, something that
that's
they needed.
That's how I feel, cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, Denver's bad. I mean, pretty bad. But
their offense isn't.
No, there were a couple of times where they were trying to take shots deep. But I just didn't think he had anything there. I thought they did a good job playing deep, and especially with Merriweather on that pick. But the front three, front four, front seven, whatever you want to call it, that was the whole key.
Yeah.
That was the whole key, and they got a push. They didn't get a ton of sacks, but they got a push, and they were making life uncomfortable for them.
I agree.
And that's what they didn't do the week
I
before.
I agree with Mike Parenti. I thought the key was the two fumbles by Andre Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Those are huge
moments. They were moving the ball early
From that point on, they really couldn't be balanced anymore. They only ran as a trick, a trick them up kind of every three or four plays. From that point on, and I thought they really ran the ball effectively.
Michael Pittman was
well on his way to a 100-yard game.
Until he got hurt. Andre Hall came in not as a reserve. He came in
but
when
Pittman
got hurt.
But even then, he ended up with 88 yards.
No, I know, but he got banged up. That's why
Hall had
to come thereafter.
In. And I think that those two, like I said, I think Fred's right. I think the Patriots still would have won the game. I'm not trying to say that turned the whole game around, but I think that's why we're talking about how good the defense played, is because of those two fumbles, and I don't think either one of them was caused. They were both balls that were basically dropped on a feather hitting the football. It wasn't this big hit with the helmet on the ball. It was a reach in that kind of tipped the ball. It was like Dennis Johnson stealing the ball from a point guard in 1984 when, he was like a cripple. He couldn't really – somehow we always found a way to strip magic of the ball at a key juncture of the game. They were just innocuous fumbles, and they killed them.
Yeah.
They absolutely killed Denver's momentum.
Poke. Good term.
And I was wondering what you guys thought of Richardson seeing time over Wheatley.
Very surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we all thought it was very surprising.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not only just seeing time over him, one guy promoted from the practice squad, one guy's deactivated.
Yeah.
There's something there. I don't know what it is, but there's something there. He's clearly not getting it or not.
No.
Yeah, Christian. Despite the fact that he played corner since middle school and is a natural at the position, according to Fred.
He's very smart.
Apparently he's
not. No, I don't think Christian, that was another question. If I had any guts, I would have asked at the press conference.
Despite the large gut, he has no guts.
Oh, come on.
Oh, you see, even Christian's disgusted with you. Even though he takes a lot of shots at me, too.
You talk about McCain. Andy now has robocalls that he sends out about us. you answer the phone. I think you need to know that Paul Perillo eats too much food at the buffet. This was paid for by Andy Hart. Oh, wait.
Classic. All right, guys. Well, thanks for
very funny.
All right, Christian.
I'll be in touch. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Christian.
Bye.
Chris,
I like his cautiously optimistic thing because I don't want to get lost on that defensive performance. Denver, I think, is a very good offensive team, and they shut them down the other night. But I don't want to get lost in that one game. I think there were some factors involved, not the least of which was
there's really, at this point, at this point in the season, there is nothing we can count on for the Patriots.
I would be
every week is going to be different. Every depending on the opponent and who's playing, it's going to be a different scenario every week. Last year, you could count on Brady.
Right.
You could count on him. You could count on Moss. You could count on certain things happening. This week, this year, Why do I keep saying week? This year, you cannot count on any particular thing happening week to week.
What's the opposite of cautiously optimistic? And was everybody that after last week?
Euphoric.
Pompous.
Yeah.
Overly optimistic.
Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking more.
No, they were over the top negative.
Right.
Gloom and doom negative.
That's what I mean. They weren't cautiously pessimistic last week. Or, you know, they went to the extreme after the loss. And now they've
unabashedly pessimistic. Would that be the opposite?
I don't know. That's why I asked.
Well,
I don't really know.
I don't think it's.
I'm going to start doing
irrationally pessimistic.
I haven't heard as many people going crazy with glee as much as I did last year, having people talk about the gloom and doom scenario
last week.
You know, I think
he stopped saying week.
I
was using weeks and years. They're all the same.
That's because everybody here is negative.
That's true.
But that was kind of my point. Everybody was, I mean, Castle was being hung up in a tree. Everybody was jumping ship.
They're quick to harp on the negative.
Well, we're cautiously optimistic.
I just think the expectations of this team going back over the last 3-4 years, when they win, you don't make a big deal out of it anymore. When they lose, it's a little
bit
different.
I think this year, when they blow people out, I don't care if it's a Pop Warner team from Foxborough. If they beat them
41-7,
I
don't think some people separate year to year. That's the problem.
You cannot take anything for granted.
I think you're right, Mike. They don't. And I think that's a good...
Like the Red Sox fans.
The good example of it is is the Castle situation.
Right.
Because they were all killing Castle. They wanted him out. How many emails did we get that specifically use the terms, he's a bum who doesn't belong in the NFL?
Yeah.
I mean, it had to be at least 50 that
Eight.
Said those kinds of words. Bum that doesn't belong in the league is starting. Now, he comes back this game, throws 3 touchdowns, has 140 passer rating or 139 passer rating.
Top 10 all
Didn't
time.
Didn't make any mistakes
history.
The whole game.
I saw one person
What's
say-
all anybody talking about? He got sacked 6 times. He didn't make any mistakes.
Yeah, but I also saw one person points. Email, let's sign him to a 5-year, $50 million contract extension.
I missed that one.
I saw that one. That
must have been a Tuesday one because those are the ones you
But
did.
I thought
it is easier to be negative, though. I mean, we're all naturally.
No, I think that's why I said Mike is right. It's just easier to be negative.
If there's a fly in your food, you send it back and complain. If it's the best ever, a lot of times you just sit there and enjoy it with your wife.
Of course. But I thought that the touchdown pass to Moss, the first one where he kind of moved to his right and threw it up high where Moss could – that's all I'm asking you to do.
And the other thing is, on those sacks, he threw no interceptions. Would you rather on those sacks he just threw the ball?
Right. Well, that's what I
– He had 6 sacks.
That was my argument.
I only had 3 sacks and I had 3 interceptions.
With the lead they had, there was no need to do anything stupid.
And I also thought the sacks took a half a second longer this week, and they weren't behind center. They were behind – and it sounds like a joke, but I thought he bought a half a second. I thought he was a little bit better.
He scrambled around a little bit.
Microscopically better, but a little better.
I want to say something and get you guys' reaction on it because I heard something on the radio today that I found kind of interesting. Someone wrote in to the EEI and said that they think that he needs to take longer making decisions.
Huh?
What? And I think that what he means, and they all jumped all over him and said it's the opposite.
That's what I was going to do.
I think that what he means is he has to be more patient. They said that he needed to be more patient in the pocket and more patient making
decisions. Oh, in terms of just tucking the ball and running?
I kind of agree with it. They, of course, jumped all over him.
I see what you're saying.
Because I think they felt what Andy and Eric thought immediately. They're talking about he's holding the ball too long, taking sacks. That's not what I think the point is. The point
is relaxed is a better word.
He gives up on the play too quickly and is ready to settle for the sack.
More relaxed, I think, is a better word.
He needs to find a happy medium.
And the ball, I also think, needs to stay up at times when he tucks it. He takes away the pass from himself.
That's I totally
think.
That's where the sacks are coming
from. Becoming more comfortable and more relaxed.
Yeah. He took at least 2 the other night that Brady may have gotten the same situation happened to him, but he would have still
Maybe
been looking
up a
and
bit.
Thrown the ball away.
Yeah. Right.
That's the thing. If he could throw the ball away a little bit more, and that's why his completion percentage is so high, because everything is either getting completed or almost completed, and then the sacks are incompletions for Brady.
Right.
Or most quarterbacks.
Right, right. That's a good point.
You know, I think what happens after a couple of times where you hold on to the ball too long and you take those sacks, then you're thinking, okay, I got to get rid of it quickly now. So then you're just kind of prone to just giving up on it a little bit more quicker than you normally would.
And that's why
you've
got to
find a happy medium in between. There's got to be a middle ground somewhere.
I do think he was a little bit better, and again, it's only now it's 6 weeks.
Well,
so if he's gaining, a quarter of a second in his it's slowing down or whatever you want to call it, well, in the next 6 weeks, if he gains 3/4 of a second, you're going to see a dramatic difference because a second is a huge difference in the course of
and
the
snaps. And say what you want,
play.
You know, the ratings, people don't like those quarterback ratings,
like
he's above the middle of the pack in the NFL.
He's not
the worst quarterback. He's not even close.
The reason for that is what I just said, the sacks.
Yeah.
But those don't hurt your quarterback.
But regardless, he had a top 10 game in Patriots history. Yeah. Tom Brady's been the quarterback for how long? So that's how many games?
He's got as many in the top 10 as Drew Bledsoe.
And, you know, big.
Speaking of holding on to the ball too long and taking too many sacks.
Big picture. Like Andy said, he's showing progress.
Sacks up.
And after six games going into the seventh game of the season, they're 4-2. They're still only one game behind the leader in the AFC.
I mean, I don't care who's your quarterback. 4-2 is a good record.
They're tied with the Bills in the AFC East.
No, they're not.
Can you imagine if they were 4-2 and Brady was the quarterback, what the reaction around here would be?
Well, we'd be concerned.
Well, the expectations would be higher.
But it's his fourth game. It's his sixth game going into his seventh game as the full-time starter for the first time since he was in high school.
Right.
You know, and he's 4-2.
I mean,
it's good given the situation. Let's cut him a little bit of slack.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's showing improvement. Let's cut him a
little
slack.
Carson Palmer would like to be 4-2 right now.
The only question.
He'd like to be walking right now.
He'd like to be able to throw.
The only thing I was a little curious about was the score was 27-34 late, mid through the third quarter.
Yeah.
I thought, all right, now we're going to start to see Kevin O'Connell just to get the kid a little NFL experience.
Right.
You know why I think we didn't?
But we didn't. So I was a little surprised.
He goes bump, 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 bump down the field.
Well, I just have him hand
that up. Just hurts your – the whole buildup of Matt Cassel as our quarterback, you start to chip away at that. Even in a blowout that Matt Cassel led you to the blowout, you now give those fans 2 weeks from now when he gets blown out by the Colts and gets sacked seven times and throws three picks.
I wasn't going to say that
you
anymore.
Give, but you give them
don't
more.
Don't give them any ammunition.
And yeah.
I also
but
think,
is he really worried about what the fans are thinking, giving them ammunition?
But is he really worried about getting Kevin O'Connell snaps? Because
well, why not?
No, but I think he's worried about,
when you're up 34
as we talked
to
about earlier, he's worried about
in terms
psyche
of his championship hopes, winning an AFC East title, winning an AFC, whatever he thinks this team can be. I'm talking about Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
What does he gain more from? Preparing Kevin O'Connell for the future or keeping Matt Cassel entrenched, confident as the leader of his football team?
I think he needs to try to balance both.
Because I think if he does the latter, it could be detrimental to the former. He could, Kevin O'Connell's out there, he's making plays. At some point, that could bite me in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if Matt Cassel's my quarterback, even with the ups and downs of recent month, that we can win and get a playoff spot and do something.
I think I understand what Andy's point is, but I think he's less concerned with that whole perception of O'Connell as he is. I think he looks at, and I think we saw it in the fourth quarter, how he did that with hurry-up stuff, things that he hasn't done a lot of. I think he's just using it all as more opportunities to get this guy the reps.
Could be.
And that's putting, in his mind, putting his team in best position to win. And I think Cassel hasn't experienced it all yet. Mm-hmm. You know, it's only been six games. He hasn't experienced everything there is to experience.
So in other words, so keep developing the guy who has the experience already.
He's getting. I think he looks at that as more beneficial to his team to have Matt out there running hurry up occasionally in the fourth quarter and doing some of those things that he did than getting Kevin O'Connell snaps at this point because he's not ready to play. Those snaps and mop up aren't really going to get him ready to play.
Dave from the Philippines is on the line. Dave, how you doing?
Oh, goodness. I didn't think you were ever going to get to me. That's the longest you guys have ever
Well, you're all the way in the Philippines. It took me a while to get there.
Hey, while you're talking about Cassel, I wanted to bring up one point about the way he played. If you go back into the second quarter on their first touchdown drive, there's about 7:40 left in the game. It's the second down play, and he's breaking out to the right because he's getting pressure from the left side. And instead of tucking and running like he did all day long the week before, he kept his head up, and he looked, and he finally found Randy Moss in the end zone. Now, Champ Bailey was there, so they didn't get the completion. They wound up having to go a couple more plays before they got the touchdown. But at least he was trying.
Yeah.
He didn't give up on the play. He kept moving to the side. He kept his feet moving. He kept his head up. He kept looking for a receiver, and eventually he found one.
That's the play I think you're talking about where Bailey made the deflection of the pass in the end zone. Yeah, you're right. That was a good play by Bailey. But
Andy blamed Moss.
Yeah, well... That's Andy.
But, I mean, it was a good play by Cassel.
It was.
You know, the week before, I think if he'd been in that same situation or 2 weeks before,
might have tucked it and ran with
he wouldn't have gotten that pass off. He would have tucked and tried to run, and he would have been probably tackled right about the line of scrimmage.
Well, I think you're right. That's a sign, a small sign it might be, but it's a sign that he's learning. He's making progress.
Yep.
You know, and again, he's 4-2
if you can, if you can buy time and you can be in a position to pass – chances are someone's going to pop open because these guys can't cover forever in this league. It's really hard to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then that's something that takes a long while to learn, and the guy hasn't played but maybe 20 downs of football in 4 years,
maybe
8 years.
And part of that is getting to know your receivers and having them know you, and that, you know, I remember Bledsoe. I go back to Bledsoe. Remember that time in, was it Jacksonville, I think. Vincent Brisby.
Why do I think this is going to be?
No, Bledsoe was on the run. Brisby didn't come back for him. He chewed him out on the sideline.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
That was a big Patriots win that
day. I mean, receivers,
I think
are,
it's going to be a little while before we see Castle chewing out Randy Moss.
No, but no, receivers are taught to not give up on the play. And that means the quarterback can't give up on the play either.
Yeah.
You know? Goes both ways.
Yeah.
All right, Dave.
Yeah, I have one other point. It looked like they were going really heavy from Denver's side on the running game to begin with, and we got those two fumbles that, you know, kept them from really concentrating on that. But they were running it against us pretty good. What I was reading in the paper was that the defensive alignments we had in at the beginning of the game were pretty well designed to take out the deep ball, which was the big problem the week before. So part of the reason that they were getting those big runs was that they didn't have a lot of people in the box.
Because they were game planning.
Yeah, they were playing. They were
Mike
playing
Shanahan was game planning
right.
for the Patriots and knowing that he was going to take away the deep ball. That's
right. Well, I think it's a chess match. But,
right.
but I think
and that's what happens once the game gets out of balance. You can't do that
anymore. And Belichick said on EEI yesterday, he said, look, we're just going to make them earn it. We just didn't want them to, you know, make them drive down the field, make them have a lot of plays. Just don't give up the big play, you know.
If we could just get our offensive line to stop giving up the sacks, because I don't put all of those sacks on Castle. There's just been way too many.
Listen, I think there's maybe two that you would put on the offensive line. I think other than that, I think it's just, you
certainly
know.
That first one I wouldn't put on Castle when Yates kind of
whiffed.
No, that was bad.
Ebenezer Ecubon,
yep.
One of the all-time great names.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thanks,
okay,
Dave.
Okay, guys. Have a good one.
Take care, Dave.
But it still worries me defensively, and I know that I'm probably, you know, somehow it's nitpicking that on a 41-7 game, but it worries me defensively, Fred, that they can't just stop the other team.
Yeah.
Why do they have to specifically game plan for what they deem the most important
right.
thing to
you
stop?
You should be able to come out in your base 3-4
I totally agree with what
people.
Dave just said.
Well, the question.
I think that they were more focused last week on making sure Cutler didn't get the ball downfield to Marshall. Well, the week before, there was the opposite, and they couldn't stop the other thing.
Right.
This week, they couldn't stop the run.
I'm not sure if that is.
That's why
I'm
don't
not
think
sure
they're that good.
But I'm not sure if that is just a Patriots thing. I'd be interested to know, you know, in a candid moment, whether it's Belichick or any other coach, how many teams in this league on defense can just do what they do?
No.
A la this, you know, I don't know.
You're missing my point. They're supposed to be the championship-level defense. That's what they're billed as. That's what people expect them to be. So other teams don't have, quote-unquote, their talent.
Well, that's well,
so other teams can't do that, but they're supposed to be able to.
According to what we're told. But they've never been a defense that lines up and just does what they do, like the Bears or the
Steelers. Well, in 2004, they could have done anything they wanted to teams defensively. They could beat you your way. They could beat you their way.
I know, but this is a different team now.
Right.
I mean, it's not the same team.
Well, that's what. But they're but they're perceived to be this great.
Well,
defense.
No. Last
year we have callers calling
and
saying
I was
the
in your corner last year.
Seven.
People were saying that that's the kind of defense they were.
They can't just line
and
up
weren't.
And stop.
I don't think they can.
They need to be in position to stop. You
Joel and Merrimack's on the phone. Joel, how you doing?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good.
Okay, Joel.
Hey, watched the game at a buddy of mine's house on a Monday night, and it's kind of funny. Week before, I was watching the San Diego game with him, and he's bitching up a storm. He's complaining about Castle. No, Castle stinks. Castle sucks. Let's run him out of town. And then this week, he's like, well, Castle's not so bad, you know. And then
right.
about halfway through
the
third quarter, he starts complaining. He says, you know, this game's getting kind of boring.
We're bored again now with blowouts.
Oh, please.
Well, it's like we're getting stomped, so it sucks. And now we're running over them, and it's getting boring.
Who is this guy?
It's a buddy of mine. I'm not giving no names out.
You send him down here. Mike Perrini, take a Qdoba burrito, stick it up you know where.
Oh come on.
He doesn't need the burrito. He just got that thing on his desk right over there.
I got a question or two. Did you guys read the, the Peter King Monday Morning Quarterback thing?
I haven't read it, no.
Not yet.
The comparison between Castle and Brady. Anybody read that?
Why bother?
We haven't read it.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
It was kind of funny because I understand why Peter King's making it because he's Peter King, but some of the stats were kind of close, and I think in some ways they were misleading because if I remember back in 2001, I don't think Brady was tossing a bunch of 10-yard passes.
No.
I think most of his passes were a little bit longer than that.
Oh, no, that was short.
But were they?
Yeah, it was. They called it the dink and dunk.
Yeah, no
remember?
One was dink and dunk.
Well, maybe it's a good comparison then because For yardage, they're pretty close to the same through, what, six games?
Yeah, the stats are actually close.
A little bit higher.
I know, but
they both had the same amount of interceptions, but Brady had like four more touchdowns.
I know, but Brady had nowhere near the talent that Castle has around
him.
And we know what Brady became.
And Brady won games that year at the end of games. Didn't do it every week.
Right.
But when he needed to, he did.
Yeah.
San Diego, the Jets, Buffalo.
And it's still early. We've yet to see that from Castle. But really, look at the talent that Brady had to work with back in 01.
And to go, Joel, a step further, Brady was sacked 41 times in 01 in just 14 games.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the sack total was very high, too, because what did they say?
Don't
make mistakes.
Don't take chances. Yeah.
Don't.
Well, that's the same thing with Castle. He's been sacked what now? How many? 25 times.
Yeah.
I think
so. He's on par to be sacked what 65 times this season.
Right.
Something ridiculous.
And that doesn't include how many times he's going to get hit or how many times he's going to get knocked down.
That's true.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's my next question. Do you think he can take that?
I don't think any quarterback can, and they've got to do something about that. You can't get hit. You can't get sacked five times in a game and knock down any other number of times above that and stay healthy.
Nah,
he's a human being.
Right.
Yeah.
Generally, I would say no.
I'm a human being, Renee.
We have to find out.
Right.
We have to wait and see what happens. If it doesn't even really matter how many times you get hit. You get hit the one wrong time.
Well, that's true. But the more you get hit, the more time, the odds are you're going to get it.
Maybe it's softens you up. I don't know.
He can take 50 sacks and be fine, but it's that one sack where
he doesn't get hit under the knee.
A leg locked out, a knee gets turned, or something like that.
He's taken a few, too, though, like really big shots to his upper torso where someone's got him around the legs, and he's not.
Yeah.
He's still fighting, and you can't do that.
Yeah. Just he's taking these big licks.
Yep.
He can't be Bledsoe.
My next question. You're absolutely right. He took a lot of those, too.
Yeah. Oh, Bledsoe took – oh, my God.
People also
scary.
Forget that early in Drew's career, he never got sacked. The first 4 or 5 years of his career, he got sacked 25 times per year.
That's right.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden in 99, it went way up.
Yep.
I know we talked about Rodney being out and about Morris getting hurt. Did Hobbs get hurt, too?
Hobbs was in and out.
But he,
okay, because I saw him one time. They showed him on the sideline, and he was grimacing in pain.
Yeah, he came in and out a couple of times.
That's not good.
He's a tough little guy, though.
Yes.
I will say, he plays hard, and he plays hurt.
Yep.
He's a tough little...
God, I hope he can keep it up, you know?
S-O-B. Well, I was going to say a word that begins with a B, but I don't know if that was all right.
Okay, let's see, guys. You have a good one, okay?
Thanks.
All right. Joel and Merrimack.
Thanks, Joel.
Calling in. We do need to get to some emails at webradio@patriots.com. We've got about 3,000 of them.
Well, that's good.
Because
that goes counter to what we were talking about, that people are more negative after a loss than positive after a win. So I'm glad we have a lot of emails.
Well, I haven't read them yet. They could all be negative. I don't know.
I don't know. 41-7 win?
Yeah, well. Jeff writes
in. Even Andy couldn't be negative after that.
Jeff is negative. He says that the team is looking ahead to 09. He says, I think this team, meaning ownership, coaches, and players, realize that they're not going to win big games without Brady, and they are playing not to get hurt. Well, they didn't do that this week, and just to get through the season. I know that is what is going on in their minds, even if they say that they are bigger than one position. Maybe they believe that after winning the Jets game, but I don't know that. But I know the doubt is in their minds after five games. Why are they bringing in a wide receiver to save Moss's health for next year? I know it. I don't know what he's talking about.
I think that whole email was ridiculous.
Yeah.
What's really the wide receiver?
What wide receiver?
The only thing I can think of. Price? That's the only thing I can think of. But that's not.
He's on the
doing
practice squad.
For Moss. That's
how are you not playing to get hurt?
By the way, I got to shout out to Lucky. Did you read the article about what he's doing in Western Mass with his Pop Warner team? There was a big article. It's from an Air Force story. But on a beautiful autumn Sunday afternoon, three coaches paced the sidelines with clipboards, strategizing, encouraging, yelling out play codes, moving players like a chess game.
I thought you
with
said
an
we
intensity,
had 3,000 emails.
Easily matching the pros. The intense trio includes Technical Sergeant Zaki Jabbar Robinson, Senior Airman Alan Ferry, and Master Sergeant Pedro Pete Hilario. So in other words, it's a whole story about how they're really helping these kids. So I want to give a shout-out to
shout
Lucky
out.
On that. It's a good article.
Where can we find that, then?
You can get it at www.westover.afrc.af.mil.
Lucky.
So it's the military website for the Air Force.
Good for him. That's good.
Yeah.
Good job,
recognition
Lucky.
Recognition for it, too.
Good stuff. Geez, we got so many. Adam. Just wondering what your take is on the Maroney to IR move. Is this the shoulder injury, or could it possibly be a mental issue? Could his issues be severe enough to warrant a move to the IR?
Well, it did.
Adam from
did.
Maine.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was probably written.
No, no. It said Maroney on IR.
He's wondering if it is mental or if it's the shoulder injury. And I think we all think that it has as much to do with mental as anything.
Sure.
Well, right? From what I understand, the injury was severe. Mm-hmm. It was severe. So
that doesn't necessarily discount the other half of it, though.
I think he might think it's severe.
I don't think it was severe. I mean, I don't think you go from being off the injury list to
severe
enough
2 weeks
later to go on IR without anything happening in between. I mean, you know,
not like he took like a
like
huge
Tom Brady. Out. I mean, that's obviously he didn't have any issue going in, but we all saw what happened.
Right.
Matt from Hudson. Oh no, it's Matt Hudson. Matt from London says, "Give Castle a 5-year, $80 million extension."
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So that's the one I was thinking of.
All right, calm down.
When it rains, it pours.
I would assume there's some sarcasm to that email.
I hope so.
But Matt is still predicting a 10-6 season in one playoff win.
$80 million for a 10-6 quarterback.
On the phone right now is Anthony from Naples. Anthony, how you doing?
Doing good, guys. How you guys doing?
Good.
All right.
Hey, Anthony. I'm deaf right now from 2Gener blasting the music.
Yeah, I can barely hear anything. But so I'm calling. What's going on with the emails? Is everybody kind of drinking the happy juice?
Well, we just started reading them, and so far, no.
No?
No, they're less up after this win than they were down after the loss last week.
Well, I think it's because you just saw Denver's defense. It was horrific. So I'm not giving them too much credit, you know? But really why I'm calling is because of Lawrence Maroney. I feel like I'm in a horrible relationship considering taking him back. And then, you know, do you think we give him another shot next year? What's that situation going to...
Hey, well, I think AKA he's under Kool-Aid contract, so you basically start over for him with him. You know, he's you got to treat him like any other running back. I think if there's another running back available, you go after him. If there's a way to help your team at that position, you make the move, whether it's in the draft or free agency, and you got to treat him like he's starting from scratch.
Yeah. Well, is his number going to be easy to... Like, let's say if just... They say it's not worth it, and he has a.
Oh yeah.
They think he might be an injury. Do you think they'll just cut him next year?
If they don't want him, I don't think finances would prevent them from getting rid of him. No.
Yeah. Okay, I just didn't know if it was going to be a big enough cap hit with it, or maybe keeping him off.
He's still on his rookie deal,
and it's the fourth year of his rookie deal, so he didn't get that much up front that it would prevent you from.
Yeah, he's very expendable financially.
I'd be very surprised if they just flat out cut ways with him. I don't think he's been Chad Jackson bad.
No, they could probably get something, but they're not going to get a big time in return on their investment.
Yeah, I would just think, you know, 2 years of him just being injured, it's disappointing.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and I don't know, it's just disappointing. I feel like they should move on. And I wanted to know, what's the story with Sam there, the other running back? Jeez, how could
Lamont
I get
Jordan
his name?
Morris?
Sammy Morris.
Sammy Morris, yes.
We don't really know yet.
I don't know.
Really? So nothing's been released?
No.
Day to day.
Asked about it in press conference today, and day to day was over.
You know, I listened to Belichick on EEI, and he sometimes talks a little differently on that show than he does, you know, in his normal press conference. The way he kind of made it sound was that Morris might be okay, that taking him out for the second half was more precautionary than anything else.
Okay. Well,
they could afford to do so, given the score.
Yeah,
they had a big lead.
I mean, the way the offensive line was blocking, and I think they realized that whoever we put in there is going to do okay.
The only thing that I would say about that specific thing that I would disagree with that is that he didn't come out for the second half.
Right.
You know, if he's on the sideline, now I can say, well, he probably could have played, but we just decided to take it easy. Because let's face it, if it had gone the other way, you probably would have wanted to have him in that game if you needed him.
And to follow
up on
that.
But he wasn't able to be there if you needed him.
To follow up on that, earlier we were talking about Hobbs and how tough he was and how he went out a couple of times with an injury. Hobbs was in the locker room today, spoke at length with the media. Morris, not to be found in the
locker
room.
Well, now you
today.
Use this to your advantage if you're the Patriots. Now you don't know if he's going to play and why give any indication that he will?
The big thing now is Jordan.
But
if Jordan is going to be ready to come back, which I'm thinking he will be based on the way Bill
He seemed a little
today.
More optimistic about it today.
Yeah, and he made that comment that he seemed to be a fast healer.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling he'll be ready.
Good. One more question on Neil, because it's kind of hard to see on television, you know, to really focus in on one play. I don't know if you guys were looking at it. How did he look?
He looked good. He only played about 20 snaps, and he did that. They did that on purpose.
And it was on and off too.
Yeah, 27, I think. He told me last night at the Halloween party, Fred. Yeah. I got a chance to talk to Stephen Neal at the Halloween gala.
So no, but he, you know, they purposely did that, you know, because he's not in football shape yet.
Yeah. Right.
And it's not really fair to him to expect him to go out. But I think they were pretty pleased with how he performed.
Yeah, he, you know, Yates obviously started. Neal came in for a couple of plays, and then Yates went right back in, and
he
then a little while later,
I
played
focused on one drive, and it was a drive where he was pulling a lot.
Yeah.
And he seemed to be getting out of that stance really nicely, and and you know, getting in front of the
play. It might be more conditioning at this.
He played the third and fourth series of the first half, then he sat out again for a while, and then he came back and played a couple of series in the second half.
Yep. Okay, so he hasn't lost any weight or anything?
No, no, he looks good. Yep.
Okay, good. Sometimes you have to be concerned with that. Sometimes they lose a little weight, and they don't have that leverage, I guess.
Yeah, he's basically had the last 6 weeks, though, where he's been pretty healthy.
Yeah.
You know, don't forget, because when he was on PUP, I think that was probably a decision they had to make. If
it
was the start of training camp, you know, coming off training camp with the regular season, I think that would be more of an issue. But I think he's probably been working out pretty good the last 6 weeks.
Okay, cool.
All right.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
All right, Anthony. How you
a lot of calls today, Freddie.
Yeah. Brian's in Baltimore. He says, so my girlfriend and I went to our first Pats home game Monday. What a day. We spent all day at the stadium and saw everything we could. We came in early around 2-ish, went to the huge Bass Pro Shop, did a little shopping for the weather, and after that we went and stuffed our faces with some Red Robin burgers and headed over to the hall and bought some Pats gear.
Good thing
I was
you got
really
here
looking forward to seeing the actual hall, but it was closed all day Monday. I guess they had some big event there. No one was allowed in. Why in the world would they close it on a Monday night when fans coming in from all over the world would want to see the hall? I didn't get it. It was very disappointing.
Everything was broken.
We did randomly see Robert Kraft in the pro shop. I should have asked him myself why the hall was closed, but it was pretty cool to see the man in person. He was walking around with Stuart Scott and a bunch of other ESPN suits trying to look important. Anyway, after on
who
later
the suits
on
or Rob Kraft.
I was going to say that.
Later on, after some tailgating,
here's another one you can add to the skit.
We went to the CBS scene for a couple of hours, and wow, I definitely recommend every fan to go there before games. The atmosphere was great. Everyone in the place was having a good time. I also think having your own personal high-def television at your seat while enjoying a good meal and brewski is most definitely the way to go. So as a whole, the
He's
trip was great,
brewski.
And the Pats were great. They finally played like I knew they could, and I can't wait to come back.
I don't need a high-def TV at my chance to have a good meal.
Hey, Fred.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the hall is always closed on game days.
The hall is always closed on game day.
Intentional.
It's rented out by corporations on game day, and I can see where fans
we
say,
don't
well,
want
that's
60,
not fair.
We don't want 68,000 people in the hall
right.
at the same time.
You just wouldn't be able to accommodate the amount of people on a game day that would want to go through the hall. It's not really for that. It'd just be a mess.
You'll have to wait is for a table at CBS scene
on a
game
day?
Two hours.
That'd be ridiculous. Two
too
hours,
long.
You think?
Yeah.
Not worth it. No restaurants worth 2 hour wait. I'm sorry.
Well, you got to get there early. Steak
especially
out your
Red Robin because it takes you 5 hours to get served.
Oh.
Now, can you go there and put like a little put your name and get one of those little beaper things and then go around shopping?
I don't know how they do.
I don't think they arrange that far.
No.
If you were at like Old Navy, on the other side of Patriot Place, I don't think those coasters with the vibrating coaster thing would work that far.
Hmm.
They don't have a 3 or 4 mile radius.
Did you guys see where the Broncos signed Chad Jackson?
Yes.
Why can't we get players like that?
What's that all about, huh?
They worked him out, what was it, a week or so ago?
Yeah.
And
apparently they did not pick his brain.
They're not very deep at the receiver spot. They have good receivers, but
they're very top-heavy like this team is.
And they're all getting hurt, too. I mean,
yes.
You know, Royal missed the last game, came back for this one. Stokely got hurt. He missed this one. Yeah, I don't think they're overly deep at that spot.
No.
Strippers has a fun fact. He says Merriweather has 3 picks, Samuel only 2. Didn't everyone make fun of Brandon's catching abilities last year? Let's give him a round of applause. Well, he has worked on that.
Yeah, he's improved.
And ironically, he worked on it with Asante Samuel.
Yeah, as you read in my poll story.
Let's see. Dan in Charlottesville, Virginia. Best intro ever. That Top Gun opening was the best yet. What do you think of Josh McDaniels and Matt Castle both relocating to San Francisco next year? With very few decent veteran quarterbacks available.
I thought they were going somewhere else with that.
So did I.
Very few veteran quarterbacks available in the annual free agent market. Can you see a team like San Francisco making a run for a McDaniels-Castle combo? There's already an opening for a new coach, and that franchise doesn't have a problem throwing money at a problem like their starting quarterback. Of course, I'm assuming that Castle's worth as a quarterback in the NFL is exponentially increased when working within the Patriots offense.
I think that's
I think he's on a cash in this winter.
I think Castle will be fine. I don't think
San Francisco's the place.
I think
McDaniels has any interest in that.
I think if Singletary can go 500 for the rest of the season, he's their coach next year.
I agree with you.
Already interviewing him for the job.
Right. Yeah, and trying to negotiate long term.
It seems like they want him anyway. Plus, I think that's a very attractive place for some really established coaches. There's already been two published reports, one about Mike Holmgren, who, despite the fact that he promised his wife that he wouldn't be in football next year, is building a house in San Francisco. That's where he started. That's where he's going to settle. So that's intriguing. And there was another one about Pete Carroll, who obviously has Bay Area roots as well.
He always
But there are specific jobs that make sense for Carroll, and that's one of them.
He was looked at it for the San Diego job.
Right. Every time a job out west opens up,
coach.
His name comes up. Don't get me wrong. He can't coach.
I think he can coach. The
fact that he finds a way to lose a game every year in the Pac-10 is proof enough that he can't coach.
Yeah.
When he has like exponentially more talent than anybody else in that Shoemaker League, he finds a way to lose a game in it every year.
Oregon's good.
They have the best talent in the country, bar none.
They do.
Every year.
They do.
Which is why he needs to stay
put. He should
put.
Be in the
BCS
title game every single year.
All right. Yeah. Don't worry about stay where you are, Pete. You got a good thing going. Right. Just stay there.
Larry from San Diego says, hello, gentlemen, and Mike. I don't think a Yankee fan can be called a gentleman.
No.
I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. I wrote you last week saying that I thought the Pats looked like they were lacking emotion and that they were too businesslike in their game at San Diego. You all poo-pooed it and said it was questioning their effort, which I wasn't. Now the poo-poo is on your expert faces. If you read or watch the comments after Monday's game, many of the Pats, Hobbs, Mankins, even Belichick, mentioned that they were not playing with as much emotion as they were too businesslike. Where have I heard that before? And they should start having fun playing the game. I saw a huge difference in their emotion on Monday. They were celebrating good plays instead of just going back to the huddle. Even Randy Moss seemed to be having more fun. This emotion does not overcome the lack of talent, but it can help them in games by giving them the extra push they need to win. Last year, their talent was enough. This year, they need every little edge they can get, and I was happy to see the positive change.
Yeah, I think it's great to have fun when you're up 34-0.
Yeah.
I'm
poo-pooing it this
week. Well, remember Randy Moss on the sideline in San Francisco waving the towel and having fun.
Right.
They were winning.
They were winning. And let's see what happens the next game that they lose.
But forget about the intensity. They did not have intensity against San Diego.
That's different.
It's different.
That's a different. That's a different observation than that.
Yeah.
And I would definitely have disagreed with it last week, and I disagree with it this week. And just because the players and coaches talk about it doesn't mean I suddenly buy it. Much like when they were trying to convince me last week that they really played okay on defense, except for the five plays that allowed 290 yards.
Because the game graded out better than it did the previous week.
You know, that would be like the Denver offense trying to tell me this week, we really did okay except for the five turnovers.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. No. You were terrible.
You can't take out the five
Patriots
turnovers.
Killed you.
You can't take out the big plays from last week. Also, too, Fred, I think the intensity issue, I think the crowd and being at home plays into that. When you come out early on the first series and you cause a fumble and you have some momentum-changing play, that's where that intensity stems from.
That was interesting, too. You guys were in on Hobbs.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked him
Hobbs
about that.
Yeah, Hobbs had a really interesting comment today, Fred. One of the reporters, the TV reporters, asked him, said, you know, you guys, you came out with more energy, you fed off the fans, and Hobbs kind of stopped him and said, let's get one thing straight. The fans feed off us because we don't feed off the fans. He says, we know where that goes. They're here one week, they're not here the next. Very, very critical comments to the fans. Suggesting that they do not feed off the fans here, and the fans feed off the players.
Wow. Okay.
And that's straight from the horse's mouth. It'll probably be somewhere on TV or
Fred
in print
had no
somewhere.
Interest in that, so he just.
I guess
off.
Not. He's reading emails.
I found that very.
I heard it.
He's had some. You know, he's been very.
Well, he was very critical of the whole booing issue.
Yeah.
Right. That's why I
was
going to
say he's very honest when it comes to that.
Yeah,
kind of
I think
thing.
That clearly bothers him. I think the fan reaction here bothers him a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bertone's on the line. Bertone, how you doing?
Burton the first.
I'm good. How you doing, fellas?
Good.
A couple of comments and a couple of questions. First with the comments. I'm convinced Sammy Morris, he's the real deal, man. I mean, the guy hits the hole like there's no tomorrow. The offensive line did really, really good last night. I got to give him props. And Sam, Matt Castle, he needed that win for his confidence. I think in the long run, it's really going to benefit him. Question, if a player gets tackled in the end zone while trying to return a kick or a punt return, is that considered a touchback or is it a safety?
I think if he makes the effort to get out of the end zone, isn't it a safety? It's not an automatic touchback, is it?
No, I believe it's a safety.
Are
you saying if he runs out of the end zone and then runs back in, or if he never gets back out?
That would definitely be a
safety. Or if he never gets out of the end zone.
Like Ellis Hobbs was 8 yards deep last year.
Yeah.
If he starts up and they get him a yard deep, is that a safety or a touchback?
I believe it's a safety.
I thought it was a touchback, but maybe I'm wrong.
Does that ever happen?
I don't remember it ever happening.
We can
look that up.
It probably has. Some guy trips and falls and doesn't get up.
Now, definitely it would be a touchback, say, on an interception or a fumble recovery in the end zone, and a guy's trying to work his way out and gets tackled. That would be a touchback.
Right.
So you're probably right, Andy. It probably is a touchback.
That's my instinct, but I don't know for sure.
I think it's a safety because if a guy catches the ball in the end zone and then just takes a knee, you know, the ref automatically or the other return guy comes over and stands in front of him and lets the other team know, okay, he's going down.
Yeah, they don't even have to take a knee, which leads me to believe that it's a touchback. And also a punt, it almost would never happen on a punt because a punt is automatically a touchback once it hits the end zone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I would see no reason for it ever to be caught in the end zone.
I'm going to go with...
Unless CJ Jones is doing it.
I'm going to go with safety, though, on this one. We'll look it up. I'm going to go with safety.
Strippers will let you know later.
All
or
right,
in 5 minutes.
See you, Burton.
Okay. Right, we're Tony.
Burton the first.
From Florida. We're calling in. More emails are just flying in. Webradio@patriots.com. That's webradio@patriots.com. 508-543-7482. A lot of people calling in today.
Yeah.
You want to
make
sure that they get on.
We like that.
They missed you guys yesterday.
That's because you keep saying there's a lot of emails, but yet you're not reading them.
Well, I'm letting people call in. I mean, Dan says a lot of people were very upset that we weren't on the
air. That's nice to hear.
Well, wasn't yesterday Patriots Monday, though?
Patriots Monday.
Yeah. So it wasn't us.
They don't like us.
No, I know.
They were just upset that they don't want to listen to that Patriots Monday.
I agree.
Patriots
I don't
Friday
listen
crap.
To that crap.
Especially Patriots Friday.
Fred, what number should they call?
617-779-0850.
And say, I want my PFW in progress.
No, all you got to tell them is...
Say, where is Perillo on this show?
We want you to talk
like
football.
That.
It's not that, you know, we don't want them to call and say, don't have your show.
Oh!
We want you to call and say, talk football. Talk football.
Oh, they were talking football yesterday, no?
Yeah, I guess.
Of course they were. It was 41-7.
I'm sure
it's
they
only when they get blown out.
They didn't talk football the week before because they lost 30-10. Those guys are worse
homers. I'm sure they're still getting plenty of Red Sox calls.
They're worse homers than we are.
If the Patriots had got blown out this week, they would have been talking. Terry Francona would have back surgery. We should break that down later today and blah, blah, blah. They're homers. It's Homer Central.
They put us to shame.
No, I'm asking what the callers would call in and want to talk about.
I don't know.
I'm
still seeing your nipples right now because your shirt's hanging open.
No, they're still talking about off-season moves now.
Of course they are. They always talk Red Sox. No one talks football here when they call in.
What's the practice update over there?
Here's the update.
Andy Hart's back for practice.
Randy Moss got his wish after a tough week of practice and a short week this week. It's a walkthrough. It's in shorts and T-shirts. So attendance was virtually impossible. Although I did not see, and this is totally just scanning 75 guys in grays, Sammy Morris. Everyone else I saw out there, Antoine Spahn always been a kick returner?
He did that a little bit in training camp.
Because he was working back there with the boys. That's what they were doing while we were out there. And one, I have no idea what it means, note, Stephen Neal had shorts on and the largest shin pads I've ever seen in my life. You know those big puffy ones that like, almost like... mixed martial art people might wear them, or not even like the little soccer ones that just cover from knee to toe.
And your duties as a fry cook, then, in case you splatter the grease on you?
Elite XC went out of business.
I thought I'd help you out there a little.
Smoothie King operator.
Kimbo Slice went down in 14 seconds, and a week later, so did Elite XC.
Lubricants.
Nothing, Fred. I got
nothing.
Other than the fact that my mini pocket knife opened in my pocket and I cut my finger.
So do you think the guys that were in charge of Elite XC sat down
in their chairs that night,
looked at each other and said, this is going to be
that
exciting night.
This is going to be huge.
And 15 seconds later, they said, uh-oh,
better get that resume out.
No, what happened is they told the guy that they called from the fry line, because Ken Shamrock got hurt, to, quote, stand up and fight with him, because the guy was supposed to be a technical fighter. But the guy stood up and fight with him and kicked his ass.
He was working the Ernst Julius machine in the lobby half hour before the fight.
He really was.
This is the first step toward the eventual takedown of this crap.
See, I disagree, though.
Go
That's
watch,
like MLS
you
going
fighting,
out of business and
go
say
watch
soccer's
Hopkins
going down
and
the
Pavlik
tubes.
From last Saturday night. You want to see a fighting exhibition? Watch what Bernard Hopkins did to Kelly
Pavlik
last Saturday.
That's why
Saturday.
No one cares about boxing anymore.
No. You're just a typical Guido a-hole jumping onto the next trend.
Guido?
I don't think there's
Doesn't
any Guido
Doesn't that mean
about
I'm Italian?
I really don't think you have
Cause
to
Because I'm a mutt, but I got no Italian.
I'm talking about the typical UFC elite, whatever, MMA
just
crowd.
Call me a Guido with his gold chain and left nipple hanging out.
There's more than my left nipple hanging out.
Matt in San Diego writes...
See below.
See below? Why? What is he
below.
What's he doing down there?
Matt in San Diego writes...
Eric took it as C, comma, blow.
See now.
You see what happens?
Matt in San Diego says, I heard that ESPN is reporting that the defense was finally motivated last night after hearing an unnamed internet radio show that reportedly ripped them, not Castle, for the previous week's loss. Apparently, Richard Seymour was quoted after the game as saying, say we are overrated now, Fred, you little punk bitch. Wasn't sure if you guys had heard that report.
We missed it, but good, yeah, good to know.
I think they also read this week's PFW, you know, saying that the running game needed to step it up a little bit because they went and had their...
Unfortunately, this week's PFW hit newsstands after
the
running game.
They're reading it today,
rushed for the most yards in 20 years, including Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis.
Strippers writes in, safety or touchback. The player receiving the kickoff could make 73 football moves, but if he never brings the ball out of the end zone before being tackled, then it is a touchdown. The same as
touchback.
If he took a touchback.
Then it's a touchdown.
The same as if he took a knee. And then he gives the definitions. Do you want him?
No.
Okay.
All we need to say is Andy Hart. Right again.
I was with you.
Glenn in Newburyport was at the game last night despite the poor attendance grade for the fans. What's up with that? Was it not full?
It was a sellout, wasn't it?
I thought it was full.
Looked the same.
Now, post-halftime red seats may not have been full. I don't know.
I especially enjoyed seeing some of the rookies make some serious contributions. That said, how do you see these new injuries and the loss of Maroney affecting the rest of the season? More of the same like last night would be great, but can we really expect it? That's Glenn in Newburyport.
A past winner of the PFW Qdoba Question of the Week contest.
Yeah.
What was the question?
Can we expect more of the same from the young guys?
I have no idea.
What young
That's
guys?
The kind of analysis we're
talking about,
for.
Like Guyton and Wilhite and
Mayo.
Yeah, well, Mayo's been in there consistently.
Then yes to all those, because those guys have played for weeks now.
And they're getting more and more.
Wilhite's closer to the top of the depth chart now than he was the bottom, because Harrison goes down and he's been playing in nickel and sub roles. So I think he and Lewis Sanders will see an increase in playing time with Merriweather now on the field all the time.
I haven't really seen enough out of Wilhite to say I think he's doing a good job, I think he's doing a terrible job. He hasn't played that much, and when he has, I haven't really...
Well, in a way, that's good news because he's not doing anything to hurt the team.
Yeah, if you don't know,
they're not throwing,
and he's not a healthy scratch, which is more less than can be said for the second round.
But in terms of the rookies, I haven't seen huge contributions out of anybody but Mayo.
Yeah,
right.
Pablo in Mexico City. I've been a listener for over a year.
Paul,
this is my first time mailing. I just wanted to say that you guys do an excellent job and wanted to ask a couple questions.
Gracias.
One, I think Merriweather has been pretty good in coverage this year. Even setting aside the interceptions, I think he has played very well. Obviously, the offseason work in his hands worked. Your thoughts?
I agree.
I think he's
done I agree.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
The one that sticks out in my mind, too, is in the San Francisco game. I think it was actually his interception where he was sort of went up to the line for a second, thinking it was a run, and then the receiver got behind him, and he actually backtracked and made the play. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was the right
one.
That
was the long pass.
The long pass, and he ended up intercepting.
He's been there three or four times when they've tried to complete deep balls down the middle of the field. He's been there.
This just in, Patriots quarterback Matt Castle, Ravens linebacker Terrell Suggs, and Raiders kicker Sebastian Janikowski named AFC Players of the Week. So Matt Castle
was the
AFC
player of the week.
Three
touchdown.
You know
passes,
what's funny?
Right?
I don't even think he was in the top five players of the game for the Patriots, and he was the player of the week.
No,
Matt Castle.
I'd put Morris ahead of him first.
Well, you know what? He had that high passer rating, which I don't really
care about.
Oh, by the
numbers, and that's how these go. They just look at numbers, and they
don't three touchdowns.
Watch the games, people.
But I think
any number
isn't that voted on by
players?
The fans.
Yeah.
Is that voted on by the fans?
No, that's the FedEx thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, because the New England fans are been known to, you know,
no,
get
the,
together.
No, the league and, does this one, and then the fans vote on the air and ground players.
A trivia question out of the release announcing said award. He becomes the fifth Patriots quarterback to win AFC Offensive Player of the Week.
Name the other five.
Yeah.
Well, Tom Brady.
I just Fred Kirsched it.
I don't think anyone heard
you. I didn't really hear you. I'm going to go with Tom Brady.
Okay, go.
Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah.
And that's it.
No.
No, you said there's
five
different ones. Are there five different ones, Andy?
You got two of them.
Well, yeah, I figured
there are five different ones, right?
Grogan, Eason?
No. Eason.
Plunkett?
Nope.
They probably didn't have the award.
I was going to say.
Tom Ramsey?
Nope.
Hugh Millen?
Oh, what's his name? Zolak got it.
Yep. Now,
for
that's
what?
Part
Michael
I,
Bishop.
The week he beat San Francisco.
Are you kidding me? He got a player of the week for that?
Yeah.
I take back everything I said about Matt Cassel not deserving anything.
There's one more, but I...
He threw one pass in that game.
He had a good game.
This one's the trick one that I
flipped. He plays with one eye, Paul.
I should have said he becomes the fifth quarterback to win AFC Player of the Week honors. Doug Flutie won it for the
Dragons.
I was just going to say Doug Flutie.
Anyway, Pablo's second question. When Rodney went down, the commentators on ESPN Latin America pointed out this may very well be his last NFL game. The question of whether he is a future Hall of Famer came up, and both commentators agreed. What do you think? I'd say he deserves it, but I don't really see him getting in.
Agreed that what? That he is or
that
is?
That he is. They think he is.
I don't think
he is. I don't think he is either.
I don't think he's in.
You can't think he is, Fred.
I don't think he is.
Okay, because, I mean, I think using your standards, he's not even close.
I think the problem is his reputation.
My standards aren't the standards of the Hall, and by those standards, he might get in.
He's good, but isn't
I'm better than the Hall.
Yes, I know.
I'm tougher. I am tougher.
But isn't there only like two safeties in or one safety in?
There's not a lot of safeties.
And the other thing I would say is he better than Ed Reed? Well, then, I mean, he's not even the best of his era. And it's a position they don't take many already. It's a limited sampling. I think he's a very good player, but based on the standards in place and the comparisons, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
Patriots
just because you say 30-30, he's got 30 sacks and 30
That's a good question.
If he had played his entire career with the Patriots for Belichick, I think he'd be in the Hall of Fame because I think
he would have been used better.
And he would have had, I think, probably 6 or 7 years like he did in 03.
Probably.
I don't think he was a Hall of Fame Pro Bowl, really Pro Bowl caliber player in San Diego.
No,
I just don't.
No.
Now, part of that is because I hated him because I thought he was a cheap shot guy. And
Chargers had some bad teams there for a while, too.
Now I know he's a great guy, and I love him.
Love him.
So I overlooked the fact that he's a cheap shot guy.
Okay. Oh, someone's at the door.
You suck, two genders.
And it's like everything else blasts your ear off. I can hardly hear this.
But it's not working. That's the hard part.
He's turning red. He's making faces. He's
hitting
buttons.
Fred Feldman, the voice of the New England Revolution. Now it's time for Andy Hart's Urban Dictionary Word of the Day. That's work. Go!
Fred, you'll be proud of me. The first one two gender handed me, I said we couldn't say. Because when it's just obvious, when it describes an act and you can visualize it, we could get in trouble. So the second one he came back with, and it ties into this week's opponent, is much cleaner. It's the St. Louis snowblowing. That's St. Louis snowblowing, but nothing like what any of you think it is, I'm guessing. It's simply the act of walking down a busy street, surrounded by pedestrians, and continuously letting out little rounds of farts. I do it all the time.
Why St. Louis?
Because that's who we're playing this week.
Insert
name of city Andy's ever been to here.
No, see, I think Urban Dictionary is really losing it. It used to be
No, the guy looking
clever.
For it is the one who's losing it.
No, I agree with you, Fred. Now, every one of them, you can...
Well, okay, can I say the one?
Can
definition. I say the other one?
No.
What do you call the thing that you buy at Bass
he
Pro?
He goes on saying, I would be proud of me because I didn't... Can I say
that's
it?
That's what I do. What do you call the things you buy at Bass Pro to go fishing?
Bass Pro.
Rods.
Yes. And what's a nickname for a turkey?
Tom.
Yeah.
What?
Tom the turkey. What? No, the noise it makes. And yeah.
Oh, a gobbler. Oh.
But isn't that a little over the top?
The worst thing we've ever said in the show.
Well, we didn't really say it.
From Rodney Harrison?
We pieced it
is
together.
Is that how that came into the show
Rodney
today?
Harrison said that?
Correct.
Well, I'm trying to figure out. Usually, Gary likes to have, like,
sounds dirty. Yeah, usually. Hot to the beginning.
Hot Rod. That would be Paul, then. That would be the definition.
Gobbler. Yeah, that's true.
Wow.
Oh, that's true. It is true.
That actually is a good tie-in.
It
Paul
is.
Just expressed his love for Rodney Harrison.
And he will not take it back. I love
you. You are a goblin.
You may never see him
again. For Halloween.
I've thought
have
of
you come to that conclusion?
I've thought of that.
You may
I'm glad,
never
I'm
see
glad
him
that
again.
I had that nice little sit-down with him on Friday now. I thought of that.
It's all your fault.
Oh, what's up, Paul? We won't see him no more.
Simon from Meriden, Connecticut.
Is there any chance he comes back? Or even attempts to?
There's a chance, but I just don't think it's going to happen.
I don't rate him.
I think it's physically impossible, first
twice
of all,
already.
At his age.
At his age, yeah.
Why? It's just a severe, severe muscle strain. Rip. Tear.
Rip,
whatever.
Strain, rip, tear. The injury got worse in 3
seconds.
But I mean,
seconds. It's
going to
get better.
Didn't it say the rehab is like 8 months?
Yeah, it's
going to
get
like
better.
That?
It's not like, you know.
But it's a major, major injury that I think even a young player would struggle to come back from.
What's the difference between that and what I had? I mean, I had a quadricep pull or tear.
You didn't tear it.
What did you have?
No, I did. I remember that, Paul.
Did you ever get it diagnosed? Like, did you have an MRI?
Well, I had all. It was
two genders losing.
You know, it was like,
I mean, I did that with my hamstring, Fred, but I didn't tear
right.
my hamstring.
No, but I immediately when it happened, I knew what happened because I've torn my hamstring too, and you know it, man. When it it's like an elastic band that just. Oh.
I'm afraid to ask this. What were you doing?
Playing bubble
football. Oh. And so it was my thigh muscle, my quadricep, uh-huh. and all the blood gathered in my knee because of
I don't
the,
think you tore it. It.
Probably not. No, but it's
I think
still...
you had a severe strain, a partial tear,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah,
he tore it, and my guess is he tore it right at the tendon.
Okay,
because
and you still can't walk.
Didn't they announce it as a knee injury?
Yes.
So my guess is he tore it way down at the knee.
Mm-hmm. But what my point is, if it's a tendon, okay, that's different than the just the muscle, right?
Well, yes.
The muscle and the tendon are they? That's where they come together.
I know.
So
the tendons control the muscles, kind of.
Well, it attaches it to
attaches
the bone.
Attaches it, yeah.
Everything he just goes
yeah.
I mean, it's a major injury. That's my point, and I just don't think there's really any plausible chance. And I know he's as driven and as motivated as any. I don't see it. I don't know what you're whispering.
We're gonna do the Qdoba question tomorrow at 12:35.
Okay,
all right.
So that's when you need to call in. For those of listening to the podcast on Wednesday night. 12:35 is when you want to call in for the Qdoba question of the day week.
Just a curiosity, you know, why do we change the time people can call in every day? Just make it a uniform time every week, and then we don't have to announce it.
Because Gary wants people to listen to the shows earlier
right.
in the week to get the answer, to get the time, to get everything.
But they
forcing
still, they
them
still
to listen
have to
all
listen
week.
To the shows to win.
Not really. You could just guess like the guy did last week.
Yeah, that's rare, though. I think that'd be rare.
Well, so far, we've had three,
if we ask
and
good
everybody's
questions,
got it on the first question.
If we ask good questions, then they'll have to listen.
Yeah, we have to ask a better question.
You have to really get in-depth now this time
right.
and pick out
right.
something that's
I
not as
easy. I think
the
questions
easy.
Have been good.
I think we want people to get it right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we want them to listen too. So you got to have it. You
they're listening.
Have
read
tie-in.
The numbers. We'll have new numbers coming out in a week.
Well, then what the hell's the point? Then make it the same
he's
time
an
every
angry
week.
Angry young man, isn't he? Angry.
Very angry. Don't touch me. I'll knock you right out.
Simon from Meriden, Connecticut. The NFL did a good thing in the offseason, removing the horrible push-out rule, which allowed a receiver to catch a pass if he was pushed out of bounds. Is there any interest anywhere from anyone in the league to do something about these ridiculous pass interference calls, which result in the ball moving to the spot of the foul when someone like Brandon Merriweather looks at a receiver the wrong way? Why not go back to the bump and run and make the quarterbacks and receivers earn what they get instead of these gimme penalties? The game is so severely compromised, the defenses are defenseless. I don't understand how the coaches and players put up with these handcuffs on the defense. Same thing for defensive holding and automatic first downs. I would like to hear your thoughts. Well, Paul,
I zoned out as Andy was gunning a soda bottle at my head.
So he's saying he doesn't like it.
I don't like the spot foul on pass interference. That was the first one he said.
I agree.
I agree wholeheartedly. Regular 15-yard penalty
yards.
Is fine. I also don't like the way they call pass interference on defenses. The ones that they should call where the guy gets hit before the ball gets there, they don't. And when two guys are jockeying for position and one guy breathes on the other, they do. I don't like that. What's the next one? Since I'm always bashing the refs, I'll take it upon myself.
The push-out. The push-out.
Has there
out
even been a good force-out?
I haven't even seen it
at this
play.
Year. I haven't
come
seen
into
like,
play at all.
Yeah, it's funny.
I've seen one or two that were kind of close. You can clearly see what Bill was talking about in the summer, that defensive backs are being taught.
Right,
when
as they
near,
should.
When they're near the sidelines, that they're carrying guys out of bounds. There's no right. question about that. But I haven't seen too many that I thought would have been catches under the old
this
rule.
This guy hasn't fallen.
No, I don't think this guy would have fallen on that rule. I don't think this guy fell on that rule when it was existing. That's why I think
that's
it was a waste
point.
Of time.
This guy's yeah. never going to fall. Can change
that was
change.
A waste of time, that rule,
There'll
because
be
it never it never
that.
Really happened.
Joe, there were a couple bad calls, though.
What were the other ones?
That throw to the pass to your beautiful throw from Cutler, the right. one toss he was able to make all night after a debilitating injury on the first play of the game. That was a bad call.
Terrible.
Because they missed it on so many levels. I don't believe the ball was in the air because the contact happened, and Paul, as you argued, it could have been within the 5 yards.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly, but
I don't
it's
think
one
it,
that they shouldn't have thrown.
I don't
in
think
my
it was
mind.
A penalty on anybody.
That was a bad call. And then there was another one, a ticky-tack one down the left side somewhere that I hated. Of course, it went against the Broncos.
Right.
That guy's a season ticket holder.
Right.
Well, the first penalty on the Patriots happened when it was 34-0.
Joe writes in, now that Harrison is done.
Swinging lefts and rights, the guy had to throw a flag.
That was the best right cross I've seen in a while. Well, that made solid contact.
That was so bad that even Fred didn't defend him.
I mean, usually these guys kind of paw at each other, yeah. but that was boom. That made solid contact. Definitely get a point in the Olympics for that one.
And
oh, the red
less
part
money
of the glove. Hit him with the white glove. Yeah. yeah.
Oh, the guy did something to deserve it. I'm sure.
Of course. Something always
two straight
changes.
Plays.
Something always changes from the game to the radio show.
Joe writes in, now that Harrison is done, which sucks, do you think we'll see Ray Ventrone a lot more? Yes, he's on special teams and on defense. I think he's third string, but I think he should start. He's short, but I think he's better hitter than Sanders. I remember that missed big tackle. I'm pretty sure it was Sanders.
Ridiculous.
This is not 100% yeah. what I think. I just wanted to throw it out there. I indeed would like to see Ventrone on the D a lot more.
Well, that would require
you're on his D, I think.
Oh, see what you did there, Mikey.
I think, yeah, he's probably a better hitter if you just line two guys up and not have any other movement going on and just judge him by the hit itself. But can he actually track down guys the way Sanders can and do all those things? Mm-hmm. Probably not. He should not start. Let's not get crazy.
We're going to see Ventrone and Slater at safety.
Yeah,
as I said in the locker room, Paul. Though I would rather see Ray Ventrone than John Lynch.
I would.
I think he's better at this point. Which is,
I saw enough of John Lynch in the preseason. I think Bill pretty much put an end to that today.
He's barely a warm body these days.
Cormac from Ireland writes in. Firstly, I wanted to complain about there being no show on Tuesday. Maybe that's the way it always been after a Monday night game. But some of us haven't been listening for that long, so we all don't know. We don't want to put up with the inferior Patriots Monday show on a Tuesday. That's the way it goes, and it's always gone that way.
But thank you for the compliment.
It also didn't help that last Thursday Fred said, see you next Tuesday.
Anyway, to the game. So there seems to be a lot of manic celebration in the forums, but to be honest, I think a lot of it is way off. Look at this. The Broncos' D is terrible. Already without Selvin Young, they lost Pittman in the game. Hall comes in and coughs up the ball twice. Cutler got injured on the first drive and couldn't throw the ball for the rest of the game. There goes the offense. All up, 5 turnovers, throwing a lot of stupid penalties by the Broncos. How could we not win in that situation? To be honest, I don't think Castle did anything special apart from that pass to Moss for the TD. The left side of the offensive line was strong, and with Morris, they enjoyed great success, again, against a poor defense, with the running game. Castle took too long to release the ball, can't move in the pocket, and was sacked and hesitant way too often. All I'm saying is let's not wet ourselves too much before we come up against a good D. That's me, Cormac.
I also want to point out he's accurate with a lot of what he says there. I give him credit. Must have sobered up for the week. of those 5 turnovers, 2 were Andre Hall, an injury replacement, and 1 was Patrick Ramsey, an injury replacement. So 3 of your 5 turnovers came as a result of injury replacements. The Patrick Ramsey one was irrelevant because it was on the second to last play of the half, but I'm just saying, 3 of the 5 turnovers came with backups.
Listen, it's more than what they
may have
doing.
Taken points off the board for Denver, though.
Absolutely. Those first 2 drives, like we said, they were moving the ball pretty well.
But
they were out midfield, roughly, right? When
I think they were in. They were pretty
for
close to Patriot territory. Yeah.
It was like 35 seconds left. Yeah, I mean, you go one first down, you can at least take a crack at a field goal. It might have taken points off the board.
Kamani's kind of the same way. He says, don't take too much out of this blowout. The Broncos, after the Elway era, have a knack forget having real bad games when they're having a good year. They could have had that type of game against a lot of people.
Well, I've also had a knack for beating the Patriots.
And I just don't think they're a very good team. I agree with Paul.
On the defensive side of the ball, they stink.
I didn't think they were a very good team coming into the game, and they did nothing to show me that I was wrong. I was surprised, however, that the Patriots were able to hold them to 7 points. And we talked about the reasons why we all think that happened.
Yeah. Let's see. Patriots are the greatest team ever. Some of us think Jay Cutler was injured.
Matt from Oregon writes in.
He misses a whole half hour of the show, but he still finds a way to needle Fred.
I know that last year the big thing was to keep the team humble. This year I think it should be to keep the team pissed off. One of the more disappointing things about last week was that San Diego won the physical battle, kind of pushed the Pats around a bit. This week they look like they were out for blood, and I'm loving it. How about those linemen getting it done? Isn't it great to see the offensive line open up a hole, see the running back actually run through it, then smash it to whoever tries to tackle him? And we actually saw the defensive line making plays. I'm pumped. Not that Denver's D-line is all that good, and of course I'm not saying that the Pats will run the table the rest of the year, but at least we've got a team that can fight. And P.S., I still haven't heard from Qdoba. I'm sure my spam blocker is catching it or something. If you give me a number, I'll call and do that, or just give me an email address. Can you help him out there,
yeah,
too,
Yeah, I'll take
Jacob?
Care of it.
You'll take care of it.
Doubtful. Along those lines of running through the hole and smashing whoever is in it, generally it was Lowry, the safety, one of the worst players I've seen in person all year.
37?
Yeah. Stinks.
I don't know what his name is. He had a tough day.
No. Louie writes in, is there any bad blood between the Patriots and Broncos? The Patriots played well, but there was a couple of 15-yard penalties that could have been costly.
Well, yeah, there were a lot of personal fouls on both sides.
It got pretty chippy.
Two in a row.
Sides. That was a chippy game.
Yeah, they don't like each other. My guess is they both pushed the envelope in terms of whistles.
And I'm going to blame Denver. I'm going to blame Denver for that because I think that's their reputation is that, you know, the Patriots get really angry about that stuff, too. The low blocks, the chop. They did get called for one chop block.
Oh, that was the one where Vrabel took the swing.
Yeah.
So I have no problem.
But I'm going to blame it on. I'm going to blame the chippiness from that point on Denver because that's their reputation. Without having seen
also Vince Wilfork's reputation. So
no, I agree. I'm
I blame some of the Patriots for theirs.
I'm not defending Wilfork. I mean, his reputation speaks for itself. Much like
Patriots
I don't defend
penalties went down
Rodney
though when Rodney left. I mean, clearly the rest of the year they're down a couple penalties a game.
I have no comment.
Walter says, I'm not ready to anoint this team to the top of the AFC East just yet. For every good game, there's been a stinker. But I just wanted to give a shout-out to the younger players that stepped up last night. Gerard Mayo, Gary Guyton, Mike Wright, Brandon Merriweather, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis. And what is going on with the O-line? There were guys unblocked getting to Castle.
There certainly was on
there was
the
on
first
one particular
plays.
Play.
Yes. Lynch, I think the, I mean, Lynch. Yates had a whiff on Ecubon.
I think the other ones, you know, were a result of Castle maybe trying to do a little too much and holding onto the ball a little too long.
I thought LaVore played pretty well.
Yeah.
From what I saw. I'm not
really
pretending I watched him every play.
I think he's better than the starter. Yeah. Well,
exactly. That was kind of my
That's
point.
That's two games where I didn't notice the right tackle.
Without really watching Nick Kazier, I saw Nick Kazier stink, and without watching Mark LaVore, I didn't see him stink.
Yeah.
That's my extent of my analysis there.
Walter also has a suggestion. He says, I had two thoughts about how to get more PFW during the week. I know you guys cannot broadcast on Friday. Option one, broadcast for 3 hours on Thursday, 11 to 2. The Thursday show always seems rushed, especially during the
Just
picks.
Just skip open locker room,
Brian. We don't get to hear your analysis of other teams and games. Option two, move the pick segment to Friday as a one-hour podcast. Combine the roster report and picks into one podcast. Paul's like, please don't do
the
that.
The second one's not a bad idea.
It's not a terrible idea. Yeah. I don't really want to do it.
The second one is not a terrible idea, but I think that people need to understand that we kind of do this in our spare time.
Right. We do have jobs. This isn't it, really.
Yeah. I mean,
we'd love to make it. You people would all send in $1,000.
If you guys could figure out how to make this our real job, I think that you'd
We'll do 4 hours a day. We'll do 10 to 2 or whatever you want us to do.
We'd have four very enthusiastic people on the radio for you every day.
Well, Michael's
I would
be Mike.
Who am I going to have write the paper? Finance?
Well, that's what I said.
They're busy getting pregame talent.
Well, they're obviously, make $5 the
they're, hard they're obviously handle in-game entertainment.
Right.
What's a newspaper? That's part of entertainment.
Yeah.
Put that under the same umbrella.
Scott
What are you looking at? Why are you giving me that hard guy look?
I didn't understand that last comment.
Of course you don't. You're an idiot.
Fred asked Gary once a question about in-game entertainment, and Gary said, what are you asking me for? He goes, who should I ask? Finance.
Let's see. Scott from Sheep Country, he says, a.k.a. Shepherd University. Awesome win. I know we are a little less than halfway through the season, but what do you guys think of our chances in the playoffs. Also, can our pass protection
I know
get better? I mean, run blocking was excellent, but pass blocking was, in a way, piss poor. Congrats to the defense. They played great, but what is the update on Harrison, Morris, and James? I'd hate to lose any of them, especially Morris. He is coming along just fine in the running game. Oh, and by the way, Shepherd University is in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, just right outside of D.C., so if you excuse, I must go and tend to my sheep.
Who's the James he's talking about?
Roland?
Edgerin?
Stacy?
I don't know.
Bill?
Stacy's day-to-day.
Yeah.
I don't
Harrison's
know.
Out for the year. We've established that.
That was a good addition with the Bill. That was a solid
Maybe he
one.
Meant Lewis good. Sanders, not James Sanders.
He didn't say James
Sanders. He said James.
That's as good as anything, though, because I don't know.
They share the same last name.
Ooh. Nothing happened to James Sanders during the game, but something did happen to Lewis Sanders, so maybe he
did he mention
But he looked fine, by the way.
Maybe he meant Jordan.
Doing the Andy Paul eyeball test in the locker room, he walked around fine today.
And Rodney Harrison's on injured reserve. His season is over and career is in jeopardy.
Chris from the Bronx. I hope
Morris
Monday night.
Today.
I hope Monday night has helped improve the outlook of a rough Boston sports weekend. I had a few questions, was wondering if you could comment on them. Terrible Broncos game, solid Pats game, or a fair amount of both?
A fair amount of both.
I agree.
Oddly enough, the Patriots have lost their starting running back and could lose their starting safety. Well, they did, but I'm not all that worried about either. Am I nuts?
No, because I kind of agree with you.
Well, I think the safety loss is somewhat significant because it really chips away at your depth. I think you're going to notice a huge difference if Antoine Spann is playing significant time or someone, you know, if Mark Dillard is somehow having to be elevated from the practice squad to the active roster, Ray Ventrone, someone brought, I think you'll notice a huge difference. On the surface, Sanders and Merriweather, you're probably going to get by. But now you're missing a guy. That was an important part of the defense, that three-man rotation, and you're missing that.
Should Castle sit through hours of Dan Marino footage to see what it's like to throw an incomplete pass and avoid a sack? Do you think experience will help him, or are we looking at what we have for the rest of the season?
I think he's making progress, and give him a little more time, and maybe, you know, like we said.
But I think in terms of that, you're looking at what you're going to have for the rest of the season.
Yeah, he's not going to get
experience helps,
better.
But, I mean.
No, he'll get better, not significantly better.
And instead of six, it might be four.
Right.
It's not, I don't think it's going to go away.
If you lose a sack because of he gets a little better, and you lose a sack because Stephen Neal plays full time and Billy Yates doesn't allow that first one,
right.
Well, now you're down to three or four, and it's a decent number, and okay, we can get by.
And as Fred said earlier, it's when those sacks occur. You know, is it on third and long, or is it in the red zone, or getting out of field goal range, whatever.
Now, there was one that was really bad the other night. They were moving the ball very well in their first drive. Well, it wasn't really a drive because they took over with the fumble, but they got a couple of first downs. They looked like they were ready to get in, and then they ran, first down, pass, sack. You can't have that one. You can't have that first down sack when you have something
going. Well,
you
were upset because they called a play, play.
I was upset on that play.
I think the encouraging thing is after a really slow start, because it didn't look good early, is that they did a much better job offensively in the red zone in that game, second quarter, third quarter, because they start out, I think,
0-2.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Two field goals. It started to look pretty crappy again, and you're thinking, here we go.
It wasn't just the scores. Paul, you and I even argued on a Moss Champ Bailey in the end zone throw.
I ripped you when you were gone on
the throw was on target. It wasn't a – he didn't crap himself.
That was a good play.
You know what I mean? There was a play there, and two all-pros went after a ball.
I think it was Anthony in Naples called and said that play actually was a really impressive play for Castle.
Mm-hmm.
He bought some extra time, didn't give up on the play, looked, and he looked where he should have with Moss because he's going to make that play. And then he said, unfortunately, Champ Bailey was there.
And next
I said I agreed. Andy thought
the next time that happens, Champ Bailey's not going to be covering Moss.
And that's my point. So even plays that don't show up as touchdowns or positive plays in the stat sheet, he's making some of those.
You had an opportunity to share some time with Ron Jaworski on game day.
I did.
On Monday, you gave him for a tour around the hall.
Gave him a quick tour of the Hall of Fame, and
he
loved it.
He gave you a few tidbits about Denver, which I won't get into because that's not right that we say what Ron Jaworski said about it. But one thing he said very positive was, don't listen to anybody that's telling you that Champ Bailey's not playing well.
Yeah.
That guy's playing great, and we saw that before he got hurt the other night.
We saw the results afterwards, and Moss started making
plays. Oh, yeah.
Chris also says, terrible Cowboys game, solid Rams game, or a fair amount of both?
I
thought it was a really, really good Rams game from what I have read about. And I did read a lot of stuff about that game because I did the preview, and clearly, the Cowboys are playing with their backup quarterback, and you're seeing life. All of these veteran backup quarterbacks that everybody thought were a better alternative than Matt Castle, you're seeing that these guys struggle, just like Castle is struggling, just because they have experience. I mean, you know, Gus Frerotte putting 10 points on the board, 12 points on the board against Detroit. throwing four interceptions against Chicago, even though they scored a ton of points. Four picks cost you the game. Brad Johnson, three picks, and they just got decimated. These guys are all been around the league, but they're not doing really any better for the most part than Castle's been doing.
Chris says, finally, why doesn't Eric sell his paintings? I don't get being afraid of selling out. Even Vincent van Gogh, the martyr of artistic integrity, tried to sell his work, but he was so ahead of his time that no one wanted them. So, Eric, if you're a crazy painter who has redefined art, don't sell. Just remember that Michelangelo and Da Vinci worked for Lorenzo de' Medici, part of the richest family in Italy. The Sistine Chapel wasn't painted on spec. And by the way, Parenti watches himself in the mirror when he works out, buys misogynistic T-shirts, and brags about his conquests. Yep, straight as an arrow.
What have I bragged about anything?
I don't know.
Nah, you have.
He's looking all around.
Hey, on the phone right now is Salt from Orlando. How's Peppa?
She is doing good.
Good.
How are you guys doing?
We're doing good, too.
Doing all right.
Better this week.
Hey, Paul.
Yes.
You know I'm white, right?
Oh, no, I didn't know. Well, the salt part of it I kind of figured, but, you know, I didn't, you know, really make any assumptions either way.
Okay.
I come off as a buffoon, I try not to make that assumption.
Because you guys were talking about who your black listeners were, and you were like, salt?
Yeah. Did I say that?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's just another example of my buffoonery. Because, I mean, it was pretty obvious that the salt part kind of took that away, but never underestimate my stupidity.
Oh, okay. I got a question for you guys. You guys were probably at the game, so you didn't see it, but after the game, Richard Seymour had like a 15, 20-minute interview with like ESPN.
I did see some of that, yes.
What do you guys think about that? I mean, to me, I was angrier by the minute the longer he went on, because it's like you finally did your job, and now you're gonna sit there and...
Well, what did he say?
Interview?
Oh, Seymour, yeah.
He was at the desk and stuff.
He was, you know, it's the regular stuff that they see all the time, but Patriots fans really get mad. You know the desk they have on the field?
Oh, yeah, okay.
You know, the NFL countdown, that podium, that's a
Monday Night Football thing.
Yeah, Monday Night usually talks to a guy after a win, you know, a guy in the winning team.
I understand that, but Richard Seymour, I mean, what, his first sack of the season, and... They're the one he brings out,
it's just on reputation. He had one against the Jets, too.
And he clearly wants to be in the media. He's been making appearances in the media. He did the pregame thing with them where we saw the Who Knows Him Better.
Oh, yeah,
he spent the week with CBS.
They got to get a guy who can talk well.
And that was
TV
a calculated
too.
Thing that he did a few years ago where he really wanted to up his profile.
They're not going
to
get a guy who can't talk.
I will play
TV.
The role of Larry Brown here if it was really 15 minutes long. He talked about the game longer than he played in it.
Right. And he is second on the team in sacks. Only AD has more.
Yeah, they've had no pass rush.
Yeah, they don't have any sacks this year.
I'm third in rushing, Paul.
Hey, Freddie.
Yeah.
He has more than the other guys.
What's
is
that?
Is going to be open Christmas Eve?
What day is that?
The day before Christmas.
Wednesday? No, I know, but what day of the week is that?
I think like a Wednesday.
Yeah, why not?
It is now.
Salt's a curse. Salt, do yourself a favor. Do not listen to Fred and actually call the hall and ask them.
I'll tell Maury to keep it open for you.
Thank you.
Keep a light
on. You coming down?
Yeah, I'm coming up for Christmas.
Okay, good.
So,
all right.
Pepper going to be down too?
She's coming after Christmas. I'm coming like 2 days before. She's coming 2 days after, but we're going to spend like a week after.
Are you bringing us lunch?
Maybe.
Oh, nice.
Maybe I'll call the Qdoba question of the weekday.
Yeah, right. And you can win and then bring it. I like the way you think.
We get that.
I get one good thought every couple days. Take it easy, guys.
All right, so. Matt from Connecticut says, how dare you, Paul Perillo? I thought
what
you were supposed to
now?
Be the guy that didn't throw facts out there and check them before saying things.
Oh, don't.
Then you've never listened to Paul.
Don't discount that.
What you said last week reminded me of someone who used to work there and will not be named. How dare you insult my Siena Saints? If you had checked your facts, you would have seen we will be a top 25 team this year. P.S. Mike still sucks, but now Paul sucks more.
Siena's not a bad team. Right. I like Fran McCaffrey a lot. By the way,
let's move on. Next email, Fred.
Siena just won. They just won a game in the tournament. I think not this past year. I think
who's this guy anyway? I don't even know who this guy is.
Matt in Connecticut.
Oh, okay.
I like Siena actually. I used to hate them when they were in Northeastern's league, but now I have no problem with them.
A lot of people calling in for emailing in for Paul. Yemi from Texas. Can Paul Perillo please expand on his baseball career at BU?
No.
What position did he play? How many games? And did his baseball career end in college?
How many games did I end? What do you mean?
No, how many games did you play, and did your career end in college?
Yes,
did you go on to the
obviously, yes. No, if it didn't end in college, I wouldn't be hanging out with you.
He went 13-72, and you, what did you say?
10-21.
13 games.
10-21.
Career?
I played 4 years at BU, and it's not a very high-level Division I program. We were non-scholarship.
In fact, it's no longer a program.
And I will be on November 15th inducted into the BU Baseball Hall of Fame.
You will?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. They don't have a baseball team anymore, but they still have a baseball hall of fame.
You do with it what you will.
Really?
Yes.
I was actually in California when Paul got the phone call.
No, I mean, I'm impressed, but what are the standards?
Low.
They don't have a team anymore, just, Fred. I think that tells you.
No.
I like to beat up and do the self-deprecating thing, okay? We were overmatched virtually every time we took the field, especially against other Division I teams. So winning games, the best year we had as a team was 9-34. Okay? We were thoroughly, thoroughly overmatched. I pitched every game that we played against another Division I team. I was completely overwhelmed by a lot of the teams that we played against. So the fact that I won 10 games is a lot.
I was going to say, I was surprised you had that many decisions for college.
I was 1 in 10 my senior year.
Given the fact you got pasted every game, you probably got lost.
I was 500 my first 3 years. I was 1 in 10 my senior year.
Wow.
And I also made the conference All-Stars as a sophomore.
Wow, that's great.
I didn't realize. And I was a two-time captain.
Because Maury said you weren't that good.
Yeah. I say that about him, too. So what are you going to do?
But that's Maury, right?
Maury, no, Brian wasn't a bad player.
But
Brian was okay.
He's still playing, you know.
Brian was one of those guys that irritated me. Scrappy, you know, clapping all the time.
He's playing Sandlot ball.
He's in a midlife crisis.
He said he was hitting the ball well,
but
too.
My career, I was not a pro prospect or anything
did
like that.
Did you bat?
I got up about 4 or 5 times. I had a couple of hits.
Did you really?
Yeah.
4 or 5 times?
I actually made the team. And when I was a freshman, I tried out as an outfielder, and I made the team as an outfielder. I was a backup, though. I never started a game as an outfielder. And about 4 or 5 games into my freshman year, I saw how bad our pitchers were. I didn't think I would be able to make the team as a pitcher.
But we
had one guy who walked 6 guys in a row to start a game. And I walked over to one of the captains. I said, listen, I'm not saying that I can go out there and get a lot of guys out, but I'll guarantee you if I pitch, I won't do that. And he told the coach, and like the next day at practice,
I'll just get hit. Measure home runs. Scott Pioli once told me he saw Paul give up a home run.
So wait a minute.
When is the ceremony? November 15th.
Wait, can I get back to the first question?
No, I want
to. How does a school that doesn't have a program anymore still have a program?
It's a long story, and I don't really think the listeners are all that interested in it. But no, they were trying to get this guy who played in the 70s or the 60s into the BU Hall of Fame, the Athletics Hall of Fame. There are no baseball players in the BU Hall of Fame. And they were trying to get this guy in who deserved it on the field, not like me. I mean, this guy was a really, really good pitcher back in the day, I guess. And they didn't really want to listen to it. They don't want to bring up the baseball thing because it was a lot of bad publicity for the school when they dropped the program and the Title IX nonsense.
They know
how
much you badmouth them.
Anyway, they
we should tell them
they hit a wall. And what they've done
is
they
said political speeches when he gets up there.
They've gone on. I don't have to give a speech, just by the way. But they've gone on and they decided to branch out and they're doing separate BU Baseball Hall of Fame. And clearly, if it was
Coach Mahoney in,
he's the one who nominated.
How long are we gone?
If
I say that,
I'll be completely honest with you guys. If it was based strictly on ability, I wouldn't be in. It was something that the coaches said. We want this to be guys of character who played 4 years, who showed loyalty to the program, and were good players.
And we'll make an exception for Paul.
If this was based solely on talent, I played with guys that were more talented.
No,
I
knew talent. And Brent from Illinois writes in www.terrierbaseball.com/Hall of Fame, you're listed.
Who did that?
Brent in Illinois. You're listed on the terrierbaseball.com website in the Hall of Fame.
So there you know I don't.
Who else is listed?
I don't know. I don't have
Dave Cunningham, Chris Alfaro, and Jeff Fisher will be in my class.
That's awesome. What?
Jeff Fisher?
What?
Titans coach?
What? Two
porn stash?
This guy had a lot more talent than that, Jeff Fisher.
What?
This guy was a really good player.
Who's on the phone? Rook's on the phone. Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm just absolutely enamored with all the great BU talk.
thank you, John.
By the way, Paul, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
That's fantastic.
I tried to prevent anybody from finding that out because Andy Hart, I have a feeling, will now be butchering me with that. The other day when I was telling Brian that I talked to Coach Mahoney and he said, what did he say? And I said, I'll tell you later. It's because you were there. I didn't want to say it in front of you.
So is there a dinner?
There's some sort of reception, yeah.
We should all be
Are
there.
Are they going to have Miller Lights?
Can I come?
No.
Come on. Andy's going to go to the produce section beforehand.
I only told them because it kind of happened when they were there. Eric and Mike were kind of there.
You're just jealous because Dartmouth doesn't even know you existed.
What did I do? In California.
About what?
I told you guys because it kind of happened. Was on my phone. Well, we were there for your big moment.
Congratulations for
boring. Paul.
Can we get a video of this? We put it up on Patriots.com?
No, it's not going to be like this fancy thing. It's going to be like
what?
Second rate.
Is there a plaque?
I would assume. I got a plaque for being an all-star.
Do you get a jacket?
Yeah, but they had a program.
I have
then.
A Letterman's jacket, yes.
No, but do they give you a special Hall of Fame jacket?
No.
Ring?
No.
Anything?
No.
A bust?
No.
You are a bust.
All right. That's gonna
How about a season ticket to the next baseball game?
Hey, John, what do you got going on your
lifetime
show?
Lifetime season tickets.
Lifetime season ticket. Hey, coming up in just a little bit, Nick Wagner from Rams.com is going to join us in the 3 o'clock hour.
I knew that name. I was like, why do I know that name? He picks in the mock draft contest.
Yep, correct. And J.C. Pearson, who with Chris Rose is going to be a part of the Fox broadcast team on Sunday. J.C. is going to join us as well in the 2 o'clock hour. So.
That's great. So
there you go. Good stuff today.
Action-packed show for John Rook coming up right after this. For us, we will see you tomorrow. It's Picks Day and the Qdoba Question of the Weekday.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Oh, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.